Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. How do we say this politely? A slightly
old.
Are you old?
I'm officially old.
Explain your situation, because I can tell you're in a whole lot of pain, aren't you?
I'm spasming.
Are you spasming as we speak right now?
This is the one day you can call me a spaz.
Really, just today?
I've been called it throughout high school. Usually, I thought I outgrew it.
You must not have listened yesterday.
I listened here and there on my way back and forth to the doctor. You know, Steve, you've had some back issues. Didn't you throw your back out once?
Yeah, I've had back issues, absolutely. It takes over your whole world, everything you do.
I have never had a back issue, and I've jokingly said every Thanksgiving I get what I call Thanksgiving back. Because you're constantly I'm using my right hand to stir things, to prepare things, to clean things.
Sure.
So you get like a little zinger in your back.
Yep.
And I thought,
hello, Dolly Madison, by the way, if you're listening.
That coconut goes down your shorts. And
coconut. Those were good ones.
Yes, they were. So you get this, you get a version of this around Thanksgiving normally.
Yeah,
huh?
And we just laugh and call it Thanksgiving back, and I slam like 4 Motrin and take a little nap. Usually I drink on Thanksgiving and then it feels better, but I didn't drink this year.
Oh.
And it just continued, and I thought it was healed, and it wasn't. And I went in the crawl space to pull our ginormous Treetime Christmas tree out. And, you know, as you're twisting and you're bent over because you're in a crawl space.
That's exactly it.
That so honestly.
It bend and twist.
Yeah.
That's what gets you in trouble.
I have never had a back issue like this before where it was just spasming and waking me up. Like every time I would fall asleep, it would just spasm. And then, you know me, I'm a bit of a hypochondriac. So
what
it's
did
like,
you think you had?
Okay, well, it's like on my right side in the back, below my ribs. It could be my kidney.
Yeah.
I drink too much. I smoked. It could be lung cancer.
Right.
My gallbladder is only functioning at 2%, so it could be that.
Gangrene.
I didn't think that.
Dutch
my dad
Elm's
died
disease.
From that, so I'm aware of the gangrene. So did Bob Marley.
Yeah.
I thought I would. That was it.
Did you go to WebMD and make sure that what you had is what
Don't
you thought you
that.
Had? Don't do that. Because they will tell you, no matter what you have, if you have a paper cut and you go to WebMD, get your affairs in order.
Exactly.
You're not going to live to see Christmas.
And I don't have enough time to get my affairs in order.
No.
I mean, even if they told me now that I'm dying in 50 years,
How many affairs are you having?
I miss
your
you,
share.
Steve.
Yeah.
So I'm here with a microwavable corn husk bed buddy.
Oh, I love those too.
Boy,
yeah,
you and I could be like roommates at the hospital.
Sometimes I walk around the house with it just draped around my neck. Feels good, you know?
I've never seen one of these before. I don't understand how that could possibly help you.
How does
that help your back? Oh, so it's... Oh, I didn't know it was heated
up. I microwaved it.
And it holds heat. And then you can get some with some aroma in them.
Yeah, this one, it smells like Argo Summit. It smells like the corn products over there.
That's great.
It's not bad. It's just different. And I'm on an anti-inflammatory big doses, so I had to eat something because it burns a hole in your stomach. And I might be taking muscle relaxers in the next 10 minutes.
Oh, no. So that what is that? That makes you like incoherent, though, doesn't it?
Might be a good show.
Might be a good show.
Could be a repeat of when you were hypnotized.
Could be.
It's just the spasming I can't deal with. And then when it spasms, I go into my Lamaze breathing.
Careful, you're going to have a baby.
But it didn't work when I was pregnant. It doesn't work now.
Do they can't even tell you how long to expect. Because a lot of times you'll go into a doctor and they'll go, this is going to be bad for the next 48 hours. They said 3 days?
Yeah.
You're going to have this for 3 days.
And then he told me these exercises he wants me to do to strengthen the trapezius muscle. And then the one that is in between your shoulder blades. It's not a rhombus, but it's
rhomboid?
Yes. That's what I got to strengthen.
The rhomboids?
I'll take 50 points for that.
How did you know that, Steve?
He has back issues.
Is that what it is?
No, yeah. I exercise.
I do too, and I know trapezius and obliques and, you know, all that stuff, but I never
delts.
Heard the... Yes.
I like to say delts when I'm in the gym. Delts. What are you working on?
So,
delts.
What's delts short for?
Delta Airlines. That's not funny.
I missed you too.
I thought it was Delta Force.
It's deltoid, but that's all right.
So you should go to a chiropractor, I think.
I went once, and I thought he was going to kill me.
Why?
Because...
She didn't pay.
I did pay. I tense up too much, and they're going to, you know, they...
They'll crack you.
Well, they... the neck is where I have issues too.
Right.
And so they say, relax, I'm just going to whip your neck around, where you see in movies that that's how they kill people.
I know.
And so I know it's going to happen.
That's what the henchmen would do in a James Bond movie.
Exactly.
But you see in movies that they stab people to death, you'd still have surgery, right?
Well, under anesthesia. This is like, I'm going to crack your neck. I go, like they do in the movies? Yes. I'm not going to lay there and relax and wait for them to for it to happen.
It feels so good when you leave.
No, it does not.
So a quick review. Your neck is bad. Your back is bad. Your knee is bad.
My knee's been fine.
All right. Well, things are looking up.
I know.
This is great news.
And then his name was Dr. Nick, too. So that's the chiropractor.
Right.
So then...
That was Elvis's doctor.
I know. Name. That's what scared me. So then he's like, just relax. I said, how can I relax knowing that you're going to just off me?
They don't sneak up on you and do it, do they? You can feel them coming and
massaging.
Well,
no, he's right there. And he's like, I'm going to do it now. And
it's more like a guillotine. They practice, they practice, then go.
Yeah. And I'm like, how can I relax? And just as I'm saying, how can I relax? He does it. And it's like, oh, that is not good. And he goes, do you feel better? I go, I guess things are looser, but I didn't like the getting there part.
How long ago did you have this done?
A couple years.
A few years ago?
I can't do a chiropractor.
No?
I'm a big-ass baby.
They put the electrodes on you? Did you have that, too?
No.
Yeah,
hey, Dan.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I have a counter.
Can I point something out? Wendy, you've just explained for the last 8 minutes how much pain you're in. Dan's question, Wendy, how are you? Good. How are you?
It's just, yeah, I guess, say. Yeah.
Thanks for asking.
I grew up anti-chiropractors. They were quacks.
I believe in them. I just, it doesn't
A long time
good.
Who was a chiropractor, and we had fun calling him a quack all the time. Well, my back went out, and this is about 6 years ago. I had a business trip in 6 weeks, and I called him up and said, "Uncle, I gotta have to do something." So
he was your uncle, or
it's just a phrase.
So I went to Al, and Al has this machine. He doesn't bend you up anymore. They have a machine that is from the space shuttle invention, and it pops each vertebrae. So that was in Schaumburg, and then he gave me somebody closer to my home in Glenview, and I've been going to Dr. Reichert for years, and he saved my trip, and
saved
my back.
Is it instantaneous, Dan? Can you tell immediately?
No. Well, no, because they check where it is. The machine checks how far out the spinal the vertebrae is.
So you go to a chiropractor's office and you sit in like a miniature international space system and it cracks your... Do you feel the crackage?
No. It's very mild. It's very mild. He is very good. And because it's a machine, he could... I was over in 2 weeks in Thousand Oaks and he referred me to a doctor who had the similar machine so he could continue the therapy on my road trip. And
I like the machine.
I do not like somebody bending me up. And the machine just worked wonders.
Listen, it works for Mr. Salty, but I don't want anybody bending me up like that either.
My regular doctor, because this was the first time I ever tried a chiropractor, so my regular doctor, I went to him, and he looked at me and goes, back, lower back problems, I can give you some stuff, but just wait till it's over. And I couldn't wait till it was over.
Yeah, I mean, we have things to do. I'm supposed to go to WTTW. So, Cornerstones of Rock is airing Thursday.
Yeah.
How can I sit and answer the phone?
You can't.
Richard Reichert really saved my
back. Yeah, we got his name about
Think
five
about
times.
It, Wendy. Buy the machine. Spend the money. Get the machine for your house.
Dan, you can come to my house, and then I'll take care of you.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you, Dr. Reichert.
He was saying, yeah.
All right, well, I'm officially old, and now I used to laugh when Steve would throw his back out. I'm like, look at Gramps.
You can't do it anymore.
I know, damn.
Not anymore.
I made fun of, Kirstie Alley's butt getting big. Look what happened to me.
Right, well.
God, I got to stop being mean.
Starting today, no more mean.
All right.
The mean is over. All right, a quick break. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, in some pain, and when I say some, I mean a whole bunch of.
It's just, I can't get comfortable.
Is that what it is?
Like, I would say, Bill, do you mind if I just lay on the floor?
Sure, go ahead. You can do that, but that won't help you.
No. So I'm just going to sit here and be hunched over and have my heating thing on.
That's fine. That's fine.
Here, I'll show you. It's called a bed buddy.
I've never seen one of these before.
My bed buddy in high school looked a whole lot different.
I would think he did. I would imagine he did. So it looks, how would you describe this?
I don't know. You describe it.
I don't know how to describe it.
It's the original Bed Buddy.
Oh, is it the original?
Feel it. It's soft. It's just corn husks.
Yeah.
And you heat it up or you can freeze it. And
this will attract the guy from the American Gothic painting.
Is it husks or kernels?
I don't know. Major.
Well, what does it feel like?
What does it feel like, Wendy?
Does it feel like little pieces of corn?
If it's husks, you can make some great tamales.
Well, it's made by the husk of a corn.
It's made by the medical division of Green Giant Foods. They provide this.
So it's the husk of a corn.
Yeah.
Of a corn kernel.
Okay.
And you have to keep microwaving it throughout the day? You have to keep bringing it in and reheating it? Is that right? It doesn't plug in, right? It's not like a heating blanket? Because my dad used to have this.
Do you see a plug on it?
I don't see a plug on it. My dad always used to have, if he would hurt his back or his side, he had like one of those heating blankets.
Oh, the heating
that plugged
pads,
in.
Yeah. I don't like that. It gets too hot.
Yeah. Jill Egan, news on Chicago's progressive talk. Jill Egan's here today, by the way.
Very progressive.
So if that helps, you got to keep using it.
Yeah, I know.
You'll be fine. A couple of days from now, you'll be fine. You got to be good for the Christmas play. We're doing a Christmas play, and if you can't do it, they've got Steve Alexander playing your part. That's not going to be the same show.
He'd probably be better.
We were running lines today, just in case.
Steve Alexander would be great.
What part am I playing?
The ingenue.
What's her name? What's her name?
The ingenue?
Walker.
Doris
Walker.
Doris Walker, Doris right. Walker.
I actually had, I hate to admit this.
But what?
I never saw Miracle on 34th
Wendy,
Street.
Wendy, it's an American classic. You never saw Miracle on 34th Street? You have to see that.
Realize my family has let me down.
No Sound of Music.
I know. And my sister told me just the other day, people, I swear to God, it was just the other day, she said, Wendy, you gotta watch Sound of Music.
Yeah.
I said, why would I do it now? I've gone this far. And she said, because it's a great movie and you will enjoy it.
Right.
And then I realized I never saw Cinderella. I never saw Miracle on 34th Street.
You guys had a TV when you were growing up, right?
My brothers and sisters saw all of it. Why me?
How did you not see
any of
it?
The baby of the family. I don't get any attention. No wonder I crave attention now.
Miracle on 34th Street was the one that they showed on Family Classics every year, the year before Christmas. I'm sorry, the week before Christmas, as WGN TV's way of saying, now it's real. Because we're showing you Miracle on 34th Street. If you didn't think it was Christmas, it is Christmas starting right now.
And I saw that it was on Family Classics, and I used to watch it, but evidently I didn't pay much attention. And I never saw the whole thing, because I adore Natalie Wood, and I didn't realize she has a starring role as such a young kid who's really got her acting chops, man.
Is she good?
She's
really
so
good.
Didn't you see the movie?
Many times.
Isn't she good?
Well, I'm just saying, as a challenge to you, somebody who needs to see the whole movie... Isn't she good? She's great.
She is good.
The version with Maureen O'Hara.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doris.
And John Payne. And Edmund Gwynn. And Jack Albertson.
And William Frawley was pretty exciting to see him in there.
Uncle Bub.
Fred Mertz.
Yeah.
Uncle Bub or just Bub?
He played the same guy. He was in 1,000 movies in the 1940s, and he always played the same guy. And never, I mean, the way he looked, like when you think about him in his Fred Mertz years, he looked like that when he was six. He looked like that his whole life.
With the big stogie, too.
Yeah, always smoking a cigarette, wearing a sharp suit. Always gruff.
I have a problem with the Miracle on 34th Street, though. There's a part where Mr. Gailey, the attorney, takes in Kris Kringle to have him be a bed, like a roommate.
Yeah.
I was going to say a bedmate, but it's not.
The time wasn't ready for that. Nope.
And he's just smoking a cigarette as Kris Kringle's going to bed, and I'm thinking, you can't do that in front of him.
I know.
His beard will get all yellowed. You can't. Secondhand smoke will be bad for Kris Kringle.
I was talking yesterday on the show, they had the Frank Sinatra 100th birthday special on the other day. So they're showing all these scenes from young Frank all through his year. And so there's one where he's performing with a guy. I don't remember the guy's name, but I guess he was a master of the bossa nova. And Frank is just like, they're sitting there and they're about to sing together. And Frank is smoking this big cigarette and there's smoke everywhere. It's like, how did you guys not know that that smoke is going to ruin you? I mean, it's Frank Sinatra. He ended up doing okay. But he's just like, he just keeps puffing smoke all over the place and this guy's ready to sing.
But they didn't think it would ruin you. They
I
just
guess
did
not.
It. You get addicted to it and they didn't really care.
Isn't that weird though? I mean, somebody had to suspect that the smoke wasn't the best thing in the world for you. But they're all using, like, you couldn't even see them at some point. It was just like being in a London fog. There was just smoke everywhere.
And you know what I noticed, like in Miracle on 34th Street and all these other old movies, you never had your person who, like, fanned it away.
No,
like,
never.
Oh, you just dealt with
right,
it.
Right, they accepted it. It was fine.
They shouldn't have. I mean, seriously.
I know.
I'm thinking poor Kris Kringle is ready to lay down and go to bed for the night.
Well, doesn't he have a pipe in a scene or two? He doesn't?
And even so, this was at night.
No, he does because he... spoiler alert from a movie that's 70 years old. If you haven't seen it, I apologize. It's 70 years old. He leaves his pipe in a very crucial scene towards the end on the fireplace, doesn't he? Or is it his cane?
No, it's cane.
Oh, it's his cane. All right.
You just ruined the whole movie.
I said spoiler alert. You can say anything.
Too soon.
You can say anything now if you say spoiler alert in front of it.
I guess. Like when Danny Bonaducci thought that as long as you said allegedly, you can
right.
say anything
you're safe.
And slam someone.
Right.
Allegedly, dig that.
Right, you're fine if you say allegedly. Allegedly, no Muslims should be allowed into the country. See, I said allegedly.
Well, Donald Trump didn't even say allegedly.
Don't you think that this is the one? I keep thinking at some point he's going to say something that will sink him. This is the one, right?
No, because people are panicked and thinking that. They just don't say it out loud. And not everybody's thinking that. But
for anybody who is on the fence as to whether or not he was a racist, isn't this the one that tips it over and says he wants an entire religion banned from entering into the country? Doesn't that define him as a racist right there? This is the one, right?
Bill, I was watching that speech last night. He gave it in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was a remarkable thing to see.
What was the reaction from the crowd as he said this?
Applause.
Applause.
That's what has stayed with me is, you know, he was appealing to people who are afraid.
That's
it. And they were just cheering him on and cheering him on.
I hate to tell you guys something. There's a whole breed of people that agree with him.
Oh, I know.
I mean, and it's changing every day. More people are going, yeah.
Can I ask a favor? I know we have to take a break for news. There's some Ted Cruz comments that are as inflammatory that aren't getting any press at all. I saw them yesterday. I saw them on television yesterday.
Did you take her painkillers?
It's just the for some reason
husks.
They're in the air. I don't know what it is.
It's all my right. secondhand husking.
So can I? Well, after the news, I want to play you some Ted Cruz audio. That's just as awful as what Donald Trump is saying, but for some reason it's invisible. Nobody's seeing it or hearing it. I don't understand why. Let's take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then that. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks a lot. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. You can jump in at 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. All right, so right before the news, Steve was mentioning how Donald Trump is speaking in front of a crowd. And he says the comments that now everybody in the world is aware of, where he says that we got to stop Muslims from coming into the country. And the crowd seems to enjoy this sort of thing. Correct, Steve? The crowd is on his side with this.
Well, his crowd certainly was. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let me play for you some audio. Now, I heard this. I saw this actually yesterday. I was watching Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC and he showed this. This is Ted Cruz over the weekend. He's at a summit. It's called the Freedom Works Riding Tide Summit. It was in Iowa.
Kind of a long name.
It's way too long. You got to shorten the name. And he says this. Now listen, not only to the comments, but to the crowd reaction. Here's Ted Cruz.
We will carpet bomb them into oblivion. I don't know if sand can glow in the dark. But we're going to find out.
Yeah.
He said this out loud?
Yeah.
So, in front of people?
In front of a lot of people, most of which seem to be in agreement with Ted Cruz. Now, carpet bomb, for people who are not aware, that's the one that takes out everything. It covers the land as a carpet would. You take out everything. You kill the people. You knock down the houses. You destroy everything. So that's his answer. Here's how you fix this. You just destroy everything. And the crowd goes, I'm on board with that. I like the sound of that. What has happened?
People want to something done. And there are so many schools of thought that, you know, oh, Barack Obama has not done enough. You know, we have to grow a pair. And I just sit back and listen to these people talk because
right.
these people talking are whack jobs, but we want an answer. We want to know why this keeps happening.
I think that's the key, Wendy. People right now want answers, or people are being given answers, not solutions.
Right.
You know, so what they're being told are these easy, we're going to make the sand glow or we're going to close the country. Those are easily understood answers, but they're not solutions to any of it.
And is
right.
Correct. And doesn't this, has there ever been more fear-mongering than what we're hearing right now? I mean, this is fear-mongering. This is them saying everybody wants to come and kill you. Everybody's looking at you, and all they want to do is kill you. It's not that way. I know that there's terrorism. There's no doubt about that.
I would like to take down all the ISIS people, but how do you completely ensure that the targets you're bombing
right.
are all ISIS members and not innocent people who are there cleaning the place or something?
Right.
In his speech last night, he, and I don't remember it exact, but he was, the way he sort of dramatized the shooting in Paris and elsewhere, he's looking at his audience, he has his finger cocked, and he goes, boom, they're dead. Boom, they're dead.
This is
this isn't
Trump
a movie.
This is Donald Trump last night.
This is not a movie, Trumparino. It's real life, and that is, you know, whether you think Trump has the answers or not, I know we're all disgusted with how things are going, and sometimes you think, okay, maybe a non-politician is the way to go, but this is one time I'm pretty thankful Trump is not in control of us.
Right.
Because God knows what would be happening.
Right. Can I read? Here's a quote, and Steve, help me with this, because I don't know that this is true, but this is a quote from Donald Trump, and here's what he says. They have sections in Paris that are radicalized where the police refuse to go. They're petrified. The police refuse to go in there. Are there parts of Paris that the police refuse to go into?
There are. They have a real problem with many of their suburbs. And so there are areas. And this goes back to someone else had said that there were no-go zones. I'm trying to remember what crisis
that was.
Meaning
police-free, you can't find, there's no
right.
police
and the mayor,
there at all?
The mayor of Paris came out strongly against that, said that wasn't the case. But that was after another recent attack within, maybe it was the Charlie Hebdo time. It was when Charlie Hebdo a year ago, and someone had been saying, oh yeah, in Paris there are no-go zones, and she said that's not the case. They do have very serious problems with ethnic minority, you know, tensions there in some of the suburbs, absolutely.
Donald Trump is, as of this morning, getting the endorsement of the neo-Nazi website Daily Stormer. The headline reads on their website, Heil Donald Trump, the ultimate savior. This is according to Andrew Anglin, who's the publisher of the neo-Nazi website. He says, finally, somebody speaks some sense. Glorious leader calls for complete ban of all Muslims. He says, make America white again. I know everybody wants everybody's endorsement when you're running for president, but if you're running for president and all of a sudden neo-Nazi groups are standing behind you, don't you go, I don't know if I'm doing everything right here. I gotta change my ways a little bit.
He just wants support, man.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, one of the things to watch today is what Republican leadership comes out and says. And, you know, it's one thing for the candidates to respond, but a lot of times, you know, a Republican senator or congressman, or in this case, I'm going to talk about Speaker of the House, you know, they try to stay out of the campaign for president.
Right.
And so, you know, some of the people who know more than me say, watch today to see if this brings out the establishment to speak firmly against the candidate. And Speaker Ryan did that today.
Is he the one, though, Steve, like of everybody running the Republican Party, is Ryan the one that needs to say something on the opposite side of Trump for people to start nodding their head and go, yeah, okay, finally?
That guy doesn't exist in the Republican Party right now, and that's part of the problem. There is no central authority. But if you see Reince Priebus come out strongly, the chairman of the party later today, if you see some others, I mean, Dick Cheney came out against
I swear,
Donald
I
Trump.
Saw that yesterday, and I thought, now Dick Cheney, who was for years considered to be one of the most radical of anybody on the right, all of a sudden he's saying, oh, this has gone too far. What does that tell you?
So, but if you see these guys coming out and they don't necessarily have a dog in the presidential hunt, but they start to speak against a candidate running, I mean, I don't want to say this could be a turning point because we've been saying, so many people have said this for so many times now, but and it never is, but I think this could signal a change maybe in the tenor of things.
Mm.
All right. Well, spoken like a true texter who is afraid to call in. Wendy needs to wake up. So I responded, about what? And he responded, these people over there do not fear. And that is why this crap is going on. Bomb them and all that harbor them.
There's no bomb.
I got to wake up.
There's no bomb that only destroys bad guys. If you're throwing
bombs
at people.
Why don't you invent that? You will be a millionaire and you'll be a superhero.
The bad guy bomb. I'll work on the bad guy bomb.
Do that.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We have a lot more show for you. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We're talking about a lot of things. What's going on in the world? We're talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about what Ted Cruz said, where you just bomb everyone. Some interesting texts have come over, and we have some calls, 312-981-7200. Here's a great one, Bill. With guns, you can kill terrorists. With education, you can kill terrorism.
Oh, that's nice. That's good.
It's just, how do we do it?
Right.
And then something else I would like to share with you, because I think it's pretty interesting. This is from 708. You have to remember, everyone loves a circus, but nobody actually wants to be an act. Trump is a sideshow barker who gets his kicks from applause. Half the people who are clapping for him wouldn't vote for him. I hope that's true.
Well, that's the part that is the unknown variable in all this, right? Is how many of the people who seem to be supporting him when push comes to shove and it's November.
We'll have to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to chime in real quick here. Don't you think Trump's plan here to not let Muslims into the country, I almost feel like that's kind of what ISIS wants. They want that mindset in America, because that's going to be off-putting to people that are already Muslim and here, and that's going to make them feel alone. And
hate us and go back.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's probably true. You're a genius. Kevin, when did that happen? When I was gone yesterday?
Yeah, I read a few books yesterday.
Wow.
Yesterday. Yep.
Who'd you want to talk to here, Bill?
Oh, everybody's good. Start out with Mike, though, because Mike may be able to answer a question or two that we have about Donald Trump.
Hey, Mike.
Hi. I was talking to your producer.
And, he's a genius, you know.
Yeah, well, he alluded to, you know, well, what about, you know, think about it, replace the word Muslim with Jews. And I said to him, well, yeah, but the Jews didn't come here to try to kill us. Now, I'm not saying all Muslims. But what I'm saying is that we need, where I agree with Donald Trump a little bit is, and I'm a Democratic voter since the Carter administration, so I'm leaning towards his ideas because I want to keep the American people safe. I don't want another 9/11. I mean, it's just terrible, but we need a database. So I said, go house to house, fingerprint everybody. Every time you go to vote, you got to put your fingerprint so we know who you are. What's you're about? I mean, when I hear when the mother was living with them in the house, the San Bernardino terror or killers, if you want to call, and she didn't know anything about it. Come on, come on.
Well, I don't know that this is something you discuss over breakfast. Hey, Mom, by the way, here's what I'm thinking.
No, but she lived in the house was small enough that they know.
Was it his mom? Because she
it was his mother. Yes,
she
his
is the
mother.
One who's allegedly radicalized her husband.
You know, my thing is that it's like McCarthy said here, you know, if you see something, say something. You know, in their country, the Syrians are not trying to fight for their own country, but they want us to do it. And I think that's what's in there. I'm tired of it. I'm just worn down.
I understand why you're tired and worn down, but there certainly are Syrians fighting on about four or five different sides in Syria for their country. I mean,
Well, what happened with the Iraqis when we gave them the guns and they turned and ran because they didn't want to fight against
one of the problems, you're right, has been getting the Iraq military to stand up and fight. That's absolutely true, but it's also
true. Exactly. If you're not willing to fight for your own country, then how can you expect...
I'm sorry, but I was speaking...
People are not used to being with a democratic democracy. They're not... They're used to... being told what to do and how, and you know, remember when Saddam said before they hung him, he said, Iraq is nothing without me. Sometimes you look at it and you got rid of Gaddafi, but he knew how to keep the people in line.
Mike, slow down, let Steve talk. You're saying about them in democracy and not being used to that. You know, a democracy doesn't refuse someone from Singapore entry into a country because of the religion they practice. Democracy.
I'm not talking about the
religion. Yes, you are. But if you're talking about.
Go ahead, Steve. I'm going to have to.
No, it's okay. If you're talking about Donald Trump's idea of not allowing Muslims in, that's what we're doing. We would, by religion, be banning people from England and Holland and Kenya from coming into this country, not because of the government or their army, but because of the God that they follow.
And is that really racism or is it religionism?
It's their thinking, their mindset. Because you could be, you could have somebody, you know, that is the best, but if you say something against Allah, my God, you're going to get stabbed.
Well, you know, being a Catholic, if you say something against God, I get pretty upset about it too.
Yeah, but you're not going to kill someone. See, there's the
and you don't know that.
But Mike, don't you think?
Mike, you don't know.
Mike, doesn't it set a bad precedence, though, for a country that was built on freedoms to say, because you are of a certain religion, you can't come into the country? Doesn't that set an awful precedent?
See, I don't think of it that way as religion. I think of it as the people who have a mindset that don't want...
Mike, there are a billion of them. And do you think they all believe that?
Well, I don't know. That's why I believe
that's right.
I do. I know. I do know.
In the United States.
I do know that they don't all believe that.
Well...
I'm with Steve on this. Well, not all of them obviously agree with this, Mike. It's generalizing, and that's what Trump is doing.
They will support, if it comes in the name of Allah, they will support each other. They don't want to turn against each other. So they'll, just like when they said in Paris, when they were interviewing the woman, and she says, oh, yeah, I know there's some terrorists that live in our neighborhood, but we're not all bad. It's like, we'll turn them in then. But
wait, we're not all bad, because I'm sure there's terrorists living here. This guy was in Chicago. He was born here.
Yeah.
They arrived. He arrived with his lovely mail-order bride from Saudi Arabia here to Chicago.
Right.
So, you know, I don't get it. Mike, we thank you for your thoughts. And, I mean, that's just it. We're frustrated, and we want this to end. And, you know, I don't know that Trump has the answers. If he can prove it, sure, I'll vote for him.
You will?
If he can completely
prove it,
because how's he going to prove it? He can say things all he wants.
He's still working on Obama not being a U.S. citizen. He's still trying to prove that.
I'm right with that, Bill.
That goes 7 years ago.
It's huge.
A quick break. News is next, and then a lot more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. Before the news, Wendy and I and Steve and most of you were talking about Donald Trump's comments, his idea to keep Muslims out of the country. And that's temporarily. I hate to water it down just a little bit. Can I ask you a question?
Looking out the window, and you see a guy who's got some kind of turbany headpiece on, does that make you feel funny that you even said that? Because it makes me feel funny.
Well,
you didn't say that, like you're not calling for that, but it's just not fair to the people that are not terrorists.
Well, of course not.
So,
no,
I mean,
not.
I feel there was a guy who looked to be of Muslim descent walking by.
Right.
And here we are discussing it, and I think he was just asking directions for someone. And then I find myself feeling bad, like, you know.
Like he overheard something he shouldn't have heard or something?
And, like, if that dude's on his way to blow up something, then you know what? I stand corrected.
Well, I do feel... I didn't see any of that happen until you just said, but I do feel bad. I don't know if you heard the story over the week. There's a girl in New York, I want to say a fourth or fifth grade girl, sixth grade girl, who was roughed up by classmates who kept calling her ISIS and being, you know, a little meaner to her than would possibly be imagined.
Kids are mean to each other to begin with.
I know.
So it's not, God, that's terrible.
It's awful. It's awful. One of my daughters, Reese, has a friend who is Muslim, and she has told Reese that her world has not been simple the last couple of months because of what's been going on. And she's not a terrorist, and nobody in her family is a terrorist.
All Muslims are not terrorists. All the terrorists were Muslim. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. All right, there's tons and tons of phone calls, and I know we have Bridget Carey coming up, so let's just get a couple of these in if we can. Start out with Patty, maybe, or John.
Sorry.
John, yeah.
My finger was too quick. We only have a minute here, so jump to it, John.
Well, I'll tell you, it reminds me of Nazi Germany before the Second World War, and there were a lot of good Germans, but you know what? They got worked up into a lather, and that's what's going on now. People are getting worked up into a lather, and they're saying things that they might not have ordinarily said before, and they're thinking things and willing to act on things that they might not have done not that long ago. And it is a true, clear, and present danger what's going on right now, and people really need to take it seriously and not poo-poo it because it can be bad. We've done that in this country before. We didn't inter all of the Germans or the Italians, but we interred the Japanese because they were different and they worshipped a different god. And if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it, and it looks like we're getting ready to repeat it right now.
Good point. I appreciate it, John. And let's get to Patty, and she had called 312-981-7200. Patty, what say you? Patty,
you there?
Patty, can you hear me?
No, I think we've lost her. We've lost her.
I don't know what the answers are, but that's true. Why should we can't repeat what we've done in the past?
Don't you think, to some extent, with an election less than a year away, this now becomes an opportunity moment for guys like Donald Trump to broaden their shoulders and stick their chests out and say, you can't screw with us. We're America. We can keep anybody out who we want to keep out. We can do anything we want to do. It doesn't work that way.
No, but it sounds great. And you know what? That's what we want to hear. You know, when you go to your mom, when you hurt yourself, you want her to say, it's going to be all right. I'll take care of it.
Yeah.
We want to hear that. And I say we collectively. I'm not saying I'm involved in that collective we.
Yeah.
But we want to hear that he has answers. My question is, anyone can say anything. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do then. But how is this going to come to fruition?
He alluded yesterday to September 11th and that we're going to be seeing a lot more of that sort of thing if we don't do something. And I know we have to protect ourselves. I understand that. But banning an entire religion of people, or as Ted Cruz pointed out, the idea of throwing carpet bombs at countries, that's not how it plays. There's diplomatic ways to do this. And I know the guys at ISIS and Al-Qaeda and stuff like that. I know they play by their own rules. They're not exactly a sit down at the table and let's talk things out. I understand that.
I know.
But there's somewhere in the middle. There's some sort of a compromise you have to find if you don't want the whole world to explode.
And I said of Muslim descent, and I know that isn't it, Middle Eastern descent. And
right.
I have something that I need to stand corrected on. And a lot of this is ignorance for me. If someone has a turban, then they are of the Sikh faith and not even close to being Muslim. The people who claim Muslims are the enemy will then learn about your so-called enemy. The ignorance around this makes me sick. I am ignorant about, I don't know what, head wardrobe signifies what.
The man who you're referring to who walked past us had some headwear on. It wasn't a turban.
I don't know what it was. I don't know. Right. Like I said, I don't know the wardrobe thing. I think Laura wants to jump in on this, but I stand corrected, and I am ignorant. And there are a lot of people that are ignorant, too. So I'd like to walk away and learn something today. Laura?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm just a little shaken here because I want to say that Sandy Hook was not Muslims. Aurora, Colorado was not Muslims. Oklahoma City was not a Muslim. Virginia Tech was not a Muslim. Northern Illinois University was not a Muslim. We're not cracking down on people that have mental illnesses. We're still allowing them to have guns.
That's a great point, Laura.
Yeah, we seem to have a way of destroying ourselves somehow. So we could address that just as equally as we could address what's going on with the idea of banning an entire religion from entering into our country.
That's my point.
All right. Well, thank you. We appreciate it, Laura. Thank you very much.
Although we feel like if it's our own, then, you know, there's going to be a bad seed every once in a while. But if it's someone who's coming into our country to attack us, we feel like we've dropped the ball or something.
Yeah, I know.
Again, the collective we.
Right, exactly. So some very uncomfortable comments. As I said at the very beginning of this, every time Mr. Trump says something along these lines, I think to myself, okay, this is going to be the one that makes everybody go, oh, man, what are we doing? But for some reason, every time he says or does something like this, his approval ratings go up, his popularity goes up, he does better in the polls. It doesn't make any kind of sense at all. So we have to wait and see what happens, I guess.
Be patient.
Will this change things or not? We'll find out.
Young Jedi.
All right. I have to. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk to Bridget Carey from CNET in just a little bit. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. It's a Tech Tuesday. You know what that means, Bill?
You say sports plus funny?
Mm-hmm. It's CNET senior editor Bridget Carey. She is also host of the CNET Update. Bridget, how's it hanging?
Hey, thanks for having me. How you doing?
I haven't talked to you in a while. And what do we need to know in the whole tech world?
Oh, gosh. There's a lot going on, even though we're getting close to the end of the year. I would say today there's a lot of buzz about Apple coming out with its very first battery case for the iPhone 6 and 6S. You know, the latest iPhones, their strong suit has never been the battery life. In fact, it's one of the biggest complaints. And for the first time, Apple now has a case, but people are kind of poking fun at it a bit online because it doesn't exactly look very cool.
And how much is it, I'm wondering, Bridget?
More expensive than any other battery case out there.
Of course.
And less power.
And less power.
So you're buying the name? Is that what it is?
There are a few advantages. So it's $100, and if you can right now get an equal one in power for $60 or $40, that get good reviews from like Mophie. Is like the Mophie juice pack is a very popular brand. That one's $60. But with Apple's smart case, here's the like extra advantage. Aside from having a big old Apple logo on the back to let everyone know, you know, it's an Apple product, it can be charged with that same charging cable, that Lightning cable is what it's called. So normally when you buy a battery pack case, you have to also charge it with a different cord.
And I hate that because if you got to keep two cords in your purse or your fanny pack or whatever you have, Bill.
I have a fanny pack. Two fanny packs. So this makes life easier or harder?
One cord.
Or yeah, that's it. It's easier.
It's worth the money for me.
Yeah, and when you're charging it on the screen, it'll tell you how much is charged on the phone itself and how much the battery power has left. You get two little battery indicators. So there's your advantage. But it has a weird, I guess you can call it like a lump in the back. It's not a smooth back. It has like a, it looks like, you know when a snake eats another animal and it kind of sticks out?
Yeah.
Yes.
What animal it ate. It looks like it ate a battery pack.
Oh, no.
Like in the middle.
Well, that's so, kind of stupid.
Well, they did that because they wanted to make it a soft case, so the top and bottom is still flexible, so you could just kind of pop it on and off. Sometimes with these battery cases, they're hard cases that are kind of chunky to take on and off.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen? These things are getting, like, the phones are getting bigger. Now there's a snake that ate a mouse for a battery pack. You're not going to be able to put an iPhone in your pocket. You're going to have to just put it, you're going to have to stick it down the back of your pants.
That's all you can do.
We're going to need now Apple jeans.
Right. Smart pants. Everyone has to buy smart pants now, Wendy.
I love it.
That's what's coming.
All right.
I know it's not Christmas time yet, but is there one thing in the tech world that everybody wants and you just can't get? It's just, it's impossible to find?
I think what we saw during Black Friday rush that was popular, that kind of, you know, was a little bit of a surprise. It's probably because of the sales. That Amazon Echo was popular. It's not that you can't get it, but people really were interested in getting this smart speaker for the home that they could talk to like Siri, but Amazon has its own name. It's called Alexa. People are kind of now getting into the smart home a little more. You know, if you want to give a creative gift, it's not so scary to get someone something. It's a little useful for smart home products. For example, if you don't want to go into the weird talking speaker route to order your groceries and music, I would say everyone can use these new smart plugs. It's something that you just plug into a normal outlet and then plug your lamp or any kind of gadget into that outlet, and you can suddenly turn it on and off by an app. It's definitely great for Christmas lights.
How lazy are we getting?
Oh, come on, Wendy. All the, you know how many muscles it takes to make that switch go up
or
down? Oh,
my God. I just got a very old timer. The timer that clicks that you pop up when it goes on and when it goes off, and I put it on the Christmas tree so we don't have to go back there to unplug it. What? Now I can turn it off with my app? I mean, yeah, I guess that saves time, but really, I'm paying for it.
Okay, I'll give you another.
God, we suck as a nation.
I'll give you another example. You are right, but maybe you need to add another step. Okay, here's two ways I can make an argument for it. One, what if you plugged in a portable heater, and that way if you can get your place toasty, if you have like a small apartment that doesn't have good heating or smart heating, you know?
Yeah.
It's smart thermostats, and that's another way you can make a smart home now, install it yourself. But that's one small thing. Two, a lot of these packs come with a very small motion detector. So imagine, open the door, that motion detector does two things. It turns on the light automatically, And it sends a text to you so you know when your kid came home from school.
That's kind of valuable. All right, I like that too.
It's what if it's my dog though that's motion sensorizing? Then Tiki will be like, Dylan, I took one for you.
Right.
I got your back.
You owe me one. You definitely owe me one. All right, so it's got, here's your options. You can make your heat go up or down. You can make your lights go brighter or dimmer. You know if your kid's home from school, and it'll play you some Hall & Oates songs if you want. Is there anything else that one of these does that says you really need, your house needs to have this?
I don't think we, I guess, beyond that need any of this stuff because it can get a little complicated, you know. But I think what's neat about all of the solutions now is that they work with iPhones or Androids. So, I mean, always check the box.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, like these, they have smart locks you can install on your door so you can open it up with a thumbprint. Most of the time, these things are compatible with both systems. So, you know, as long as you're double-checking the box before you buy it for someone, you don't have to worry too much about what they have at home.
Yeah.
And also smart garage door openers. That's a big deal. If you always forget to close the garage door when you leave, you can do that by app now, too.
An idea. Remember to close it.
No one has time to remember anymore, Wendy. Those are the old days.
I'm telling you, with the thumbprint lock, too, my fear is that somebody's going to cut my finger off
just
to get in my house.
Yeah.
I've watched too many movies.
It needs to be warm and have blood and electricity, and so you'll be okay.
You'll be fine.
Okay,
don't stop worrying about people cutting your thumbs off. Bridget, you know what I saw? And maybe these have been around for a while, but I just saw them recently. There's companies that they're like clones of the old video games like Atari and Intellivision and ColecoVision and Genesis. And they're like 40 or 50 bucks, and they come loaded with games. Have these been around for a long time, and I just didn't know it?
Standalone sets?
I've seen them for a year. I've seen them for a year or two, they do make kind of fun nostalgic gifts. Like I grew up with a Genesis, and I see them sometimes. But they come preloaded with games. I think the more fun one is if you have someone who kept all their games. So some of these systems you can buy online, like we'll take the old cartridges too.
Yeah, you couldn't load in. So, the downside of these were you couldn't put cartridges in. They were only the preloaded games, and for some reason, they picked the worst of the games. Like, none of the really good titles are in them.
Because we got it, Santa brought it a couple years ago, I thought, and Centipede's in it, and all these.
Oh, some of the good games.
Yeah.
Then. Oh, all right, good.
On our unit that Santa got, but, you know, he's special.
Yeah, he's got stuff, right.
All right, and something.
We're also finding that like, some of the systems themselves have, like, downloadable retro games. Like, I can download some really old games on the Xbox.
Bad.
Or the Wii has old ones, but not every title. But yeah, that's another thing to look at.
Yeah.
I have been surprised to find out that my husband has an addiction, and it's to Q-Bert.
Q-Bert's a fun game.
It's not that fun, guys. I got to tell you, when we go to this arcade near our house, Galloping Ghost in Brookfield, he will not leave. He'll stay there for 12 hours until he has like the first 10 scores on there. Q-Bert. I didn't know.
He's fun to go to bleachers with, too, because he'll go up a step, then down, then up two steps, and then down one. I've been to games with him.
Hey, real quickly, Bridget, I want to ask you about this anti-bullying emoji, because, you know, I have recently jumped into the world of emojis, and I sort of like them. I used to hate them, but kids, man, they use them all the time. So tell us about this new anti-bullying one.
Okay, so there's an icon that if you have an iPhone, you may have seen and wondered what it was, and it's starting to appear on Android slowly and on Twitter. It is an eyeball inside of a speech bubble. And this wasn't an emoji that was officially created by the consortium that makes emojis decisions, you know. This is actually something by the Ad Council, the same folks that brought you McGruff the Crime Dog and Smokey the Bear.
Take a bite out of crime!
That was Ed Obradovich, sorry.
They have a new campaign called I Am a Witness. And the point is, if you see bullying online or in a social network, you should use this emoji almost as a support tool to say, hey, friend, I saw what happened. That's not cool. We don't support bullies here. It's a way for people to have something to say if they're not even sure what to say when they see something awkward happen online and someone bully another person, you know. So now it's on Twitter. Twitter's a place where you see a lot of bullying because people are anonymous on
there.
So, use the hashtag I am a witness, and the little icon pops up automatically for you on Twitter.
They should have called it Can I Get a Witness. That would have been
Can I get
so
a witness?
Much better.
All right. I like that too. Well, Bridget, we appreciate it. Thanks very much. And what's coming up on the CNET Daily Update?
Well, we're also talking about how Facebook just shut down a bunch of apps that were not successful. Facebook's been trying for a while now to compete with Snapchat, and it made up a bunch of weird apps that, guess what, no one used, and they shut it down. So no surprise there, but it's the end of the year, and they're cleaning house.
Excellent. Bridget, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. It's Bridget Carey, everybody, from CNET, host of the CNET Daily Update. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming your way in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We forgot that our next guest, David Hochberg of Pearl Mortgage, no A in it, P-E-R-L Mortgage. We forgot he has a theme song now.
Well, David, we have referred to you as the excitable boy because you are usually a little bit on edge, irritated, agitated. Not
but he
today.
Gets the job done.
He always gets the job done. Today you seem gleeful.
You got a problem with that?
What's going on? No, oh, I love it. No, no.
No, everything's good, man. It's a holiday season.
Yeah.
It's 30 degrees out.
And I'm starting to pay off my credit card debt as other people should be doing.
$16,140 is the national average of credit card debt.
Thank
per
God
family?
I'm not above
per
that.
Per family.
Per family, $16,000 in debt on credit cards.
That's not a lot. I'm sorry.
You don't think it is?
No, I do think it's a lot, but I think there are people that, you know, when the big boom happened, were carrying because they were living off of it.
And I will tell you this. Salaries have not gone up. People are still paying what they're paying, and costs of everything have gone up, except gas. Gas has come down. Gas used to be...
Milk. Milk's $5 a gallon.
Right. Milk, eggs. All the staples have gone up. All the food products have gone up, except gasoline is the only, you know, really... thing that has gone down
for now.
Okay, it used to be at $4 a gallon at $2, so that's great. You're saving $50 a month, $50 a week, $50 a month on your gas. But you know, when milk is $4 or $5 a gallon, and eggs are more expensive, and people aren't getting increases in income in their jobs, you know.
David, here's what's strange about that. When the price of anything would go up, any food product or anything, they would say, well, the price of gas is so high, so for us to get that product to you, that's why the price is so high. But now gas is really low.
Gas is really
low. The prices on everything stayed up, though.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to have an excuse for everything. But the bottom line is this. I'm still running, and I've talked about this ad nauseum on this station and other stations, that the people that I pull credit for average between $20,000 and $40,000 worth of credit card debt. And now a report came out, you know, recently, today, $16,140. And what does that equate to? What does that mean? Okay, that means that if you're carrying balances on your credit cards, anything you charge this month is being charged interest right away. You're getting tagged with interest right away. That's number one. The other thing it means is, thanks to Obama One and Obama Administration One and the Schumer Plan, when they redid the credit cards, the minimum monthly payments went from 2% up to 4%.
Thanks, Obama.
Well, no, I'm just no. Go up or down the dial for that. I'm just stating, everybody's want to know how come my credit card payments went up, because Chuck Schumer passed the credit card law during Obama administration.
Thank you, Amy
one.
Schumer.
No, it's
her
Schumer,
uncle.
It's her uncle. Cousin, I think.
Cousin.
Right?
Cousin. Yeah. So your minimum credit card payment on that 16 Gs is $645 a month. That's $7,747 a year just to go to maintain the minimum payments on your credit card.
With nothing coming out.
With nothing going down. It's like throwing a rock at a tank. So just think of that. You know, happy holidays.
Yeah.
When you're out there throwing $500, $600, $800 for little, you know, Sally and Timmy out there, when you can't afford to pay your gas bill or can't afford
but
to
Sally
go out.
Sally and Timmy have to have a lovely Christmas.
Absolutely.
You know that, David.
Okay, but it's
going to
cost
Christmas away from Sally and Timmy, David. Please.
That's why you should convert to Judaism.
You made me snort.
That's why.
That's why. It's
another
subliminal.
It's another
reason.
It's Madison and Mackenzie now. It's not.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
The names have changed. Ryan
Madison
brings up a good point.
Dreidels are cheaper.
Dreidels are cheaper.
American Girl dolls.
Exactly.
David,
but
you helped me refinance a dreidel years ago, and I still appreciate that.
Yeah, 30-year fixed loan on a dreidel.
It hasn't appreciated.
It was phenomenal.
Right.
In that little wooden dreidel.
Right. And for people who sometimes come into money, the best thing you can do is pay off that credit card debt, isn't it? Because that's going to be your highest interest rate by far, more than your house, more than your car.
Absolutely. I just had a couple, young couple, called me up in July. They had, she's self-employed. He's got a job as a school teacher, $100,000, $90,000 in student loan. Her parents were going to gift her $100,000 for the down payment of a house.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, that's great position to be in, but why don't you take, instead of put $100,000 down on a house, why don't you take 90 G's and pay off your husband's?
Because then they don't have a house.
No, stop yourself. Okay. That's not the proper thinking, because they took the 90 grand. Okay. And paid off the student loan, say $1,500 a month. So for the past 4 months, They've saved $6,000 on top of the 10 grand that they've been able to save just by not spending money and tucking it away. And then her husband's credit report shot up because there goes 90 G's worth of debt off his credit report. So they've saved $10,000, $15,000. Boom, they want to buy a $230,000 home, 5% down, 3.5% down with an FHA loan. If you're a veteran.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to ask you that.
It's a veteran.
I don't like when people say veteran.
No, it's veteran. I was corrected by a Vietnam veteran, you know, politely, and he scared the hell out of me. So I said, absolutely, sir. So it is veteran. So if you're a veteran and have VA eligibility, you get 100% financing, zero down. So you got to move the money around. But if they had $90,000 worth of credit card debt and they got $100,000 gift, absolutely pay the credit card
debt. Question, though. He paid off $90,000 of the credit card debt.
Student loan debt.
Okay. Well, let's turn it into a credit card debt. If you pay $90,000 off your credit card debt, how quickly will your credit score go up?
As soon as the credit reporting agencies update it with the three credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion. Now, there are thousands of credit cards out there. There are 1,000 installment companies out there. Each one of them have a certain day that they report to the big three, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. So,
and that TransUnion Orchestra, by the way, puts out a hell of a Christmas CD.
Right.
Phenomenal. Like, and actually, TransUnion's right downtown here in Chicago.
Oh, they are?
About 2 miles from where we're sitting right now.
You mean TransUnion Station?
No, TransUnion.
I thought you were going funny there.
No, but that's pretty funny. That would be funny. Union
It wasn't
Station.
Really. I was going to slam you on you. How many shows at Zany's?
No. There's a two-drink minimum. I got 8 minutes. I'm on the opening act. But if you pay it down, the important thing, how soon does it take? You could send the money in today. They reported to the agencies, to Visa, MasterCard, American Express. They reported last week. You send the money in, it doesn't report for 27, 30 days. So within 30 days, everything will be updated.
But can it go up tremendously
absolutely.
If you're paying $90,000 off?
I've seen people's credit scores go up 60 to 100 points. Okay, just by lumping off that much money?
Wow.
Absolutely.
But the key is to get a relative like the one you mentioned who gives you a gift of $100,000.
Or somebody. I'm not
find
asking.
Somebody like that. I need a relative like that.
That was a wonderful gift, right?
It was a fantastic gift.
He married, right?
Right.
So,
I married for love. What was I thinking?
Randy, you got to rethink this.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a lovable guy, but if you could go for the money next time, definitely go for the dough.
Think about
it. I love Jimmy, but, you know, this is Prince Charming comes along with a bag of cash. Hey, Jimmy, you could see the kids ones every other Saturday. Exactly. Just give him the keys.
True.
He'll understand.
Yeah, he will. We'll ask for a loan then.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody
buy my house.
We
He'll
got
be
it
happy.
All worked out. Yep.
It's all good.
All right. More with the excitable boy, David Hochberg from Pearl Mortgage. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
And questions, 312-981-7200. That's the number to call.
David Hochberg is here to help you. He's Santa's little helper. He wants you to give him a call at 312-981-7200 and answer all of your questions.
Can I just give a quick tip to renters thinking about buying a home?
Yeah.
Write the rent check during the month that you owe the rent, even if the landlord doesn't come around. Because if you don't, you're not going to be able to buy a home. You have to write the rent check in the month you came around. As I was leaving.
What do you mean?
I was leaving the office, I overheard a processor talk to one of their clients.
Yeah.
And what happened was it was a privately owned home that somebody was renting, not a management company. The landlord came around once every other month, so they gave him two checks at the same time.
Okay.
That's not good. You've got to give them the check in the month that it's due. So now they have to wait until March. Until they have 12 months payment on time.
Oh, I see.
So you've got to write the October payment in October.
Mm-hmm.
And the landlord doesn't have to cash it. You just have to write it and get it to them. So don't wait for the landlord to come walk around to get the check. Mail the damn check to them. Or better yet, set up some type of disbursement, withdrawal, and deposit directly from your checking account. So it automatically goes in every single month.
I love that. That is so easy, those easy payments. Oh. Everything's online now.
Click and enter it in and click. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Or else
you're not going to be able to buy a home or refinance.
We were talking about credit. Average American credit card debt down to $16,140. Colleen, you had a credit question or comment for David, didn't you?
Yes, I do. I had a credit score of around high 750, and I owed about $10,000 on my credit card. So my banker convinced me to take out a personal loan to consolidate all my credit card payments. And, gee, while I was at it, I added another $8,000 so I could buy a car with cash.
Okay.
My credit score did not go down, but it didn't jump up like
to 800 or anything. I mean, it went up a little bit, so I'm just wondering why it didn't go up more. Is it because of my bank loan?
No, no, because you're in the upper 1% of the people out there in the credit world. It goes from 350 up to 850, and, you know, when you're in the 750 range, there's really not, you know, not a lot of room to go up. I guarantee if you were at 620 or 640 and you paid off all that stuff, you'd be closer to 700 than you were when you started. So when you so when you when you're in the 750 780 range, or you start with an 8, I had a lady that I pulled credit a couple of weeks ago at 3.8s, and she 805 804 806, and she was upset that she wasn't 850. I'm like, sweetheart, just be happy it starts with an 8, for God's sake.
I'm like shooting for 850. You mean I'll never get there?
Right. Yeah, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? You're on this side of the grass, and you got out of bed under your own power. So, you know, 750, you got other things to worry about. I mean, move on. Yeah.
Take the pressure off,
yeah,
Colleen.
Yeah, take the pressure off, Colleen.
Thank
don't worry
you so
about
much
it.
For
David,
calling.
David, if your credit score and your cholesterol are the same, is that good or bad?
That, no.
That's
actually,
bad?
Actually, yeah. Well, if you have cholesterol, 750 cholesterol,
you're dead.
You're probably dead.
You're
so,
away.
Yeah, it's probably not a good
bad.
Thing.
Is this Cecile? Hi, Cecile.
Yes, hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. I wonder if it was such a good idea about 8.5 years ago, my husband and I paid off our house loan.
Yeah.
Now, when we go to have our taxes done, and everyone has said this, and I don't know if it's true, we can't itemize because we don't have any write-offs with the interest. Is that typically a good idea to pay off your loan, or should you keep something?
Well, you can itemize other things, can't you? Just not your mortgage.
Listen, I'm not a CPA. I don't play one on TV or on the radio, and I don't give out any tax advice. So here's what I would recommend to you, Cecile. I like debt. I like good debt. I like people taking out mortgages as long as they can and using that money to invest in other things that'll make them more money than the 3.5%, 4% they take out on their mortgage. Now, that's my school of thought. That's the way I live. There are other people that hate mortgages and want to pay them off faster. That's great. That's the way you were brought up. So for the tax deduction that you're not getting, the amount of money that you're paying on your mortgage is also not there. So you got the yin and the yang with that philosophy. And again, to take out a $100,000 mortgage to have debt, to have it sit in the bank that's going to pay you less than one half of 1% doesn't make any sense to me either. So this is a question for your CPA and financial planner. I've got CFPs, certified financial planners that are coming to me to taking money out of their homes and investing it in other things because they want mortgages. So it's a pain tolerance level to debt that's only specific to you and your husband that you could live with, because a lot of people don't like going to bed with mortgages or debt, and that's fine. So talk it over with your CPA and certified financial planner and do what's best for you and your husband.
I really appreciate that. I was thinking maybe of a home equity loan just to put some more debt out there and then to be itemized on
no.
home equity.
What? Why are you groaning?
David's groaning.
Home equity loans are higher interest rates than fully amortized ARMs and 30-year fixed loans. If you're going to go in that direction, call Margie at First Midwest Bank to take out a home equity line of credit. You could get a home equity line of credit for zero closing costs. And the money, again, check with your CPA if the interest on that is tax deductible, because you only pay interest on that when you write checks. Home equity loans are typically shorter term loans at higher interest rates than what you could get with a fixed rate or an adjustable rate mortgage. Okay?
There you have it, Cecile.
There you go,
Cecile. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Happy holidays.
All right. Someone wants to know if you, do you, David, have closing costs at your company for refinancing mortgage or lower interest rates?
Yes. Closing costs. Everybody has closing costs one way or the other. Okay. So our closing costs at Pearl are around $2,000, $2,100. Other people's closing costs are higher. I strongly encourage you to compare closing costs.
But sometimes you'll hear in an ad, somebody will go, and absolutely no closing costs.
And this is how it works. We could put you into a slightly higher interest rate than the rock bottom lower interest rate, and that the lender gets paid more money, okay, based upon the interest rate. So the higher the interest rate, the bigger the money that the bank is going to pay. We could put you into a slightly higher interest rate, so we did on all your loans, Wendy, and give you a credit for all your closing costs. So if you're in the 5-6% range or 4.875, and we could get you into 3.875 with no closing costs or 4 1/8 with closing costs, go with the 4 1/8, because if you could do something for free, and if rates drop in the future, you're not kicking yourself that you just blew $2,000 on closing costs. If your closing costs are greater than $2,000, you should run away from that lender.
Something's wrong.
Because they're charging you excessive closing costs that aren't there or shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. But the closing costs should be around 2 G's.
You know what's funny when you think, when I thought of the, we've only had one house, and when we bought it, I think interest rate was like 12 or 14%.
And that was a great deal.
I mean, I know. Yeah. And just to think of it now that it's, if you can do well, it's 4 or below.
Yeah. Around 4%, right? And you got a steak knife, a toaster, or the or the dinnerware set. Right. You know, when you got that.
Go with the carving
knife. 1 point, 1 point, 1 point. Yeah. And they all charge you one origination point. It's a different market today.
Unfortunately, we are not going to be able to get to all of these questions, and we have more credit questions and a bankruptcy phone call.
Sure.
How can they reach you, David?
You could always call me at 312-751-1333. I try to make it as easy as possible. 312-751-1333. Or you could go to WGNDavid.com. Three W's in front of that, WGNDavid.com. You can send me an email direct from my webpage on the Pearl Mortgage website. And, I'm here to help. It's a lot of people don't know what to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be on with Steve sometime next week. And I helped John DeCoss out and his wife. And we're going to talk about, what I did, a similar type of program that I put, you and Jimmy on.
Oh, their credit sucked too?
Well, they were credit challenged, and they didn't know what to do.
And that's just it. You don't know what to do, and you don't know who to ask, and you don't know who to trust.
Right.
That is really the bottom line.
John's a 50-year-old man going, I don't know where to start. And he could write a comedy show. He can make you laugh. You know how tough it is to write an 8-minute skit?
Absolutely.
It's very
great.
Difficult. I can't do 8 minutes. I could do 30 seconds on the radio. But, putting a set together, standing up in front of an audience, he could do that in his sleep. You could do that in your sleep. I can't do that. I could do mortgages. And I was explaining stuff to him and his wife, and they're like, we didn't know that. We didn't know that.
There are a lot of things that people don't know, and again, they don't know who to ask. They ask, like, their parents or something.
Their parents don't know, unless they listen to this show and listen to WGN. But next year, exciting stuff. We're going to be doing webinars and another live promotional thing where we're going to be doing webinars where people could go on. I'm working with Mark Doyle from Rags of Honor.
Oh, yeah?
We're going to be doing webinars for veterans and military personnel that are getting discharged from the military. We teach these men and women how to survive and how to fend for themselves and how to learn a trade and everything else. We don't teach them anything about credit. Okay. So what we're doing is we're going to go to the bases via the internet, and we're going to teach these men and women before they're discharged how important, what credit is, why it's important, how they could, utilize the VA entitlement that they've earned while fighting and protecting our liberties, fighting for our country and serving our country.
And many of these veterans don't even know they have.
Not a freaking clue.
I know.
Yeah. I'm like, you qualify for that. No, I don't. That tax abatement program that the state put out, how many Vietnam vets say, oh, that's not for me. I'll let it go for the other guy. What are you, nuts? Go for the other guy. There's plenty of money for you and the other guys.
Right.
Go get what's rightfully yours.
Get the paddles.
That's the David Hochberg I love.
Get your money.
That's
PTSD. These guys got PTSD from the 60s, and they're sitting in their basements crying and having a nervous break. Go get the rating that deserve and get your taxes waived.
Say happy Christmas to Sally and Timmy for us, will you?
No problem. As I'm Hanukkah shopping.
Your phone number
happy
again.
Happy holidays. 312-751-1333, 312-751-1333. Go to WGNDavid.com.
Thanks, David. Thank we'll check in with Steve Bertrand next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thanks very much. Wendy and I were just paying you a huge compliment, by the way, Ryan.
Is that what was going on?
We were paying you a compliment.
Okay.
We were saying during the break there, during the commercial break, we were watching you on the monitor. And for people who don't have a monitor, I urge you to stare at Ryan any chance you get. Just look at him through a window here at work or at home.
You can stream it live on WGNRadio.com.
Yeah, you can do that. But we were both saying, look at how eager Ryan Burrow is to deliver the news to the people of Chicago. You were just like, enough with the commercials. I got a job to do.
I got the elbows up. I got the suspenders on. All Larry King ready to go, right? Let's do it. Schomburg, hello.
That's what we love to see. That's the eagerness.
Downers Grove.
Yes.
What you got? Talked about Trump. Let's do this.
That's how it should be. All right. I hate to bring the mood down.
No, you don't.
It's not
like
my
it.
Job to bring the mood down, but I have some news that on any given day.
Fabulous.
That's not me. On any given day would be sad news, but during the holiday time, and that's what we're in right now, Wendy, it's the midst of the holiday season, this news becomes tragic. Are you ready?
Yes.
Sit down, everybody. If you're standing up, sit down. And if you're sitting down, stand up. Do whatever position you're in, alter your position. That's the kind of news I'm about to deliver, Wendy. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings. Charlie Brown is going to jail. Are you shocked?
What?
Good grief.
Are you a little... Well, good grief is right.
Wait, the people on this... Did you hear that, people?
Charlie Brown is going to the big house.
Going to the big guy. Everybody outside is shocked. People stop. People who are walking down Michigan Avenue, they've stopped. No one knows how to react to this.
Will you still be able to have a cool Yule?
No, it's over. People are shaking their heads.
Christmas is over. Christmas is dead. How about that?
Christmas is over. Here's the story. A former child actor who was the voice of Charlie Brown in three major Peanuts specials. And these are the big specials. This is your Charlie Brown Christmas and Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. These are the big ones. Is headed to prison, this according to reports on the AP, despite a last-ditch effort to withdraw his guilty plea in making criminal threats.
Lucy for constantly pulling the football away from him?
Yes.
He finally snapped, didn't he?
Well, his defense attorney went wah-wah-wah-wah-wah, so it was going to be a tough case to win.
A judge sentenced him to nearly 5 years in prison. This took place yesterday on Monday. How do you put Charlie Brown in jail for 5 years?
Well, what did he do?
I'll get to that part of the story. It's not good, by the way. It's not good. Peter Robbins, who's now 59 years old.
Any relation to Christopher Robbins of Winnie the Pooh?
No, that's from Winnie the Pooh. Oh, bother. Peter Robbins, 59. Think about that for a second. The little kid who did the voice in Charlie Brown Christmas is almost 60 years old. Think about that.
What was his tagline? It wasn't drats.
He would say rats or drats or good grief was
good
the
grief,
most common.
Was it?
Yeah, that was the most common one.
Can you believe I couldn't think of good grief?
Good grief.
For cry eye.
I don't think anyone in real life ever says good grief. Like if you live in Charlie Brown world, everybody says good grief. But in real life, have you ever heard anybody say good grief? That doesn't happen.
No, but I think I'm going to replace that with the MF that I usually say at home.
It's safer.
Good grief, right thing. Kids.
Good grief, children. What happened to mom? She's a pod person. He lent his voice to a slew of Charlie Brown holiday staples, which includes the 1965 classic A Charlie Brown Christmas, 1966's It's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. According to IMDb, Robbins was the first actor to voice the role of Charlie Brown. This began when he was 9 years old, and he did it until he was 13. Robbins quit acting in 1972, although now he's acting like a jerk and he's going to jail.
He's a blockhead.
He is a blockhead.
He stopped acting by his own choice, or he couldn't find any gigs.
I think your answer. Yes.
Hey, do we need a bald kid?
Yeah. Need a bald kid with a yellow shirt with a black stripe that goes up and down and up and down, a wavy black stripe. Sometimes I see people with that shirt.
That you can order it everywhere.
I always think it's cool for a little bit, but then I think, yeah, but you walk around all day in that shirt, then it gets kind of old, right?
Have you looked in the mirror?
I guess I do. I wear pretty much those.
Although you're not wearing your Peanuts gang hat.
Not today. Wendy, because I'm sad. This is out of respect to the Charlie Brown characters. Kevin, do you have a little bit of audio for people who don't know the voice of Peter Robbins from Charlie Brown? Let's listen to just a little bit of him.
I don't care. We'll decorate it, and it'll be just right for our play. Besides, I think it needs me.
What an
so
angelic voice. Oh, come on. Come on.
Hold me, Charlie Brown.
Oh, don't. Although, you know what Kevin and I did? Because this is our mindset. We were trying to think of what holiday special they could now have. And I'm going to give Kevin full credit because I'll tell you what mine is.
I don't know
that
I want credit here.
Kevin's was way funnier than mine.
All right, what was yours?
Mine was Orange is the New Blockhead.
I like that.
That's not bad. But Kevin beat me. Kevin's special was the best. Can you do it, Kevin, or you want me to do it?
I can do it. Yeah. Don't drop the soap, Charlie Brown.
I think Bill's is funnier.
No. No. Kevin's is funnier. I think
no, because Kevin's is more realistic.
Too real?
I think it's really
funny.
Why
do you think they have soap on a rope in prisons?
Do they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I used to sing for the prisoners.
I happened to find some
I didn't.
Actual Robbins courtroom audio, and it's kind of really sad.
Does he talk like Charlie Brown?
No, but he's talking about like that he's mentally ill and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, no.
I don't know if we should play
is
it or
he
not.
Really?
Well, yeah, I want to hear that.
It's kind of sad. Should I fire it?
Yeah, because I want to hear how he sounds today.
I want justice to be served. I'm mentally ill. To stick me 3 years in a state prison is not benefiting the justice system, I don't feel. I feel I'm entitled to at least a second chance.
Good grief. He should have ended it with the good grief.
He should demand that Lucy give him his 5 cents back for all those psychiatry sessions.
He'd
be
a millionaire.
He'd get a lot of money back.
Now, wait a minute. We still don't know what he did, do we?
I'll read that to you. Peter Robbins appeared at his arraignment on Wednesday in San Diego and charges of stalking and threatening his former girlfriend and a plastic surgeon who gave her a breast enhancement. None of this is Charlie Brown-like. There's not a part of this that reminds me of Charlie Brown.
That is a great pumpkin.
Who gave her a breast enhancement. On Halloween night, Wendy, the great pumpkin rises out of the pumpkin patch.
That's not all that's rising.
But Peter Robbins was not happy with the breast enhancement surgery that his girlfriend had received, so he threatened the doctor.
So is he still seeing this girl?
It's that part is unclear. I'm trying to see.
My guess would be no.
Probably not. Probably not.
So he think he did like a botched job?
Yeah, that the doctor involved, the plastic surgeon, could have done a better job. So there was some threatening going on. It said he sent threatening letters. It goes on and on and on. But
that's not that
this,
bad.
Well,
I mean, I know you shouldn't threaten people,
right?
But they were just right. A ruse. He wasn't really going to go through with it.
I don't know that I could sit on a jury and know that it was Charlie Brown up there. And say that he was guilty. Like
the
whole
time,
I
brought that up.
Wouldn't you, if you were the lawyer? I would keep accidentally, instead of saying Peter Robbins, I'd go, Your Honor, my client Charlie Brown over there. He's got trouble with the kite, with the kicking of the football.
Had a hard life.
His parents talk like cars. I don't know. The guy's lived. He's really lived a very tough life. 5 years for Charlie Brown. You think they'll tease him in jail at all?
Nah,
they'll leave him alone. They'll be fine. He'll be fine.
That is kind of tragic.
It's awful. It's terrible. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got plenty of show for you in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. You can call in or text in at 312-981-7200.
You forgot the number. How many times a day do you do it?
3 or 4 or 5.
I mean, look at the number.
Every time.
Oh.
Every single time.
Have you done any Christmas shopping yet?
Well, we've looked around a little bit, but we have not made a single purchase yet. How about you?
That's typical for me, not for you.
We usually have, by this time, by the end of the first week in December, I'd say a third of our things bought. Roughly a third, and this year we've looked around but not come away with anything.
I haven't even looked around.
What's holding you back?
Dylan's birthday is Friday.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of been focusing on the Dylan.
Sure.
The D-dog, the Dilly dog.
Yep.
He's 13 on the 13th. I made a big deal about his golden birthday.
You want it to be a whole weekend of gifts, you said.
Well, maybe not a whole weekend of gifts.
But activities. Yeah.
Hawks game Friday night.
That's a good start.
So he can wear his early birthday present, his Andrew Shaw jersey that I got him. I'm a great mom.
He already knows this?
Well,
he gave it to him early?
He's been wearing it.
Oh, all right.
I hope he knows it.
We always wait until the birthday, but you gave it to him early.
Yeah, well, it's not really a birthday present because then, of course, I had to buy Michael one. And Michael makes it difficult because Michael wants, I go, if you could pick anybody, who do you want? And he goes, Stan Mikita. I'm like, old school, great choice,
That's
but you
got
a special
choice.
Order that one at the Blackhawks store.
And I think for some reason, it's more expensive, isn't it?
No, if you get like the authentic throwback jersey,
sweaters.
Yes.
Sweater.
I'm not saying sweater because
Judd Surratt very angry if you don't say sweater.
I don't get the top of the line one. I get the middle
the one,
that
looks like
which is still a couple $100, but that's the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And they told me that you can get it custom with any, you know, name or number because they didn't just have your Stan Mikita.
Right.
And
you want, because some people get their own names on the jersey.
I don't think that's.
It looks better to have an actual Blackhawks name than just your own name, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it? It's better. Because the Blackhawks have a ton of guys that you'd be proud to wear their name on your sweater / jersey. But if you're wearing your own name, it's a little much.
It is. And, you know, usually people who have the jersey with their own name, usually there isn't a corresponding player on the Hawks with that same name.
Yeah. You know, that's so funny you guys say that because I think just the opposite.
Do you? How come, Steve?
I've always felt weird wearing someone else's name.
Well, there's this
like you're pretending.
Why? You're a fan of theirs.
But there's an axiom that says that if you're over 12, you shouldn't wear somebody else's name on your jersey.
I do not agree.
You don't agree with
that? I love guys in jerseys.
Yeah.
You don't.
Well, I've told you that when my wife wears, I have two Miami Dolphin jerseys, and my wife doesn't wear them anymore, but there was a time where she would throw one on, and I would say to myself, that's a good look.
And then you tackled her?
Yeah, I'd pretend she was Larry Zonka.
39.
Yep.
It was Mercury Morris, 22.
Right up to the Larry Zonka part.
when we're holding hands, is it okay if I call you Zonka? Are you okay with that? I'll call you Zonk.
Bob
is that
Greasy,
okay?
14, 21, Jim
wow.
Kick.
Wow.
Mercury Morris was 22.
Yeah.
I like the Dolphins
back then.
That's
excellent. Very nice. The 72 Dolphins.
Yeah, they were pretty fantastic.
Undefeated.
But you wore your Hawks jersey or sweater.
Yeah.
I'm not saying sweater. It's not of the sweater material right. anymore. You looked adorable. I love guys in jerseys. I love when Kevin wears it. Jimmy Mack wears his.
Kevin, by the way, wears only a jersey. You got to put pants on, Kevin, when you wear the jersey.
Well, like, you know, one have to be
I guess.
There.
Can it's I tell like, you that's
Kevin's
how Dylan
like
was wearing
Bear.
It all weekend?
Just
He's
the top?
Gonna be 13, yeah. I'm like, do you have underpants on? He goes, yeah. I go, well, you put some sweats or something on? Because it's a little big on him.
Oh, all right, good.
But I've heard that, you know, what you said is true. When you're over 12, men shouldn't wear jerseys.
That's what people say, yeah.
Who says that, though?
I've heard people say that. I don't know.
I love guys in a jersey and flip-flops. Maybe
but
not the same.
But a jersey with someone else's name in them on it, you know? Like they're pretending to be Sammy Sosa or something?
No, they're not pretending. They're saying, hey.
It's a tribute.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's weirder to have your own name because then you're like, hey, I'm the stuff. I'm on the Hawks.
I play for the Blackhawks.
I can see that. I get that.
Do you have a jersey, Steve?
I guess I don't.
You
I have
an one?
Old Bears one that was that I had back in the days. It was 87, so it was when Tommy Waddle was playing. I'm not going to put Tom's name on my back.
That would be strange, right?
So you just have the number?
I think it does just have 87 on it, yeah.
He ripped it off with a seam ripper.
Last year, when my best friend in the whole wide world, Grant Mulvey, was kind enough to take me to a Blackhawks playoffs game, I'm sitting with all these Blackhawks alums, guys who played for the team years ago, and on my way there, I'm thinking to myself, now, are they going to wear their own jerseys with their own names on it? Because they legitimately played for the Blackhawks, so will they go in the closet upstairs and pull out an old jersey, the Reggie Fleming jersey, and wear that?
Thank God Grant Mulvey doesn't see your thought bubbles.
Oh,
that's all I got to tell
he
you.
He would stop being my best friend immediately, I think. He would cash in his chips. Or are they going to wear the modern-day players' jerseys?
No, they wear their own number.
No, they dress like civilians, like everybody
oh,
else
yeah.
at the United Center was wearing a Blackhawks jersey, except the guys who used to play for the Hawks. They're all wearing jackets and polo shirts.
Right, but now, although I got to tell you, when they showed Bobby Hull, when Patrick Kane broke his record.
And he was pretending to be happy?
Exactly, because I was seeing
I
the F word coming out on my high-def TV.
Would you want a guy to break a record that's been yours for all those decades? I'd be like, oh, don't. And then the camera's on it. Yay!
I know, it was pretty funny. but he, I can't remember if he had his jersey on. I don't think
I don't
so.
Think
they don't typically wear
he did have
him.
A jersey on. I don't think he did.
But so anyway, Stan Mikita, I wanted them to have their jersey for the game Friday night for Dylan's birthday. Michael will not have his.
He won't.
So I have a Jonathan Toews knockoff that he's
oh,
going to wear.
That's not bad. That's still good.
I like the real deal, though.
Oh, yeah. If given your choice, that would be the way to go.
But I have not bought a present for Christmas because of Dylan's birthday.
Not a single gift.
Mm-mm. For myself.
And you'll wait. Well, that's a given.
Well, yeah, because I'm the only one who knows what
you're
I want.
You're out shopping. You see stuff you like. It's on sale. You'd be crazy not to. Why wouldn't you?
You bought stuff for yourself, too?
Not this year, but I would say my ratio on any given Christmas of buying things for myself and then everybody else I have to buy for is about a 1-to-1.
You like this sweater, you guys?
That is a very nice sweater.
Thanks.
Was that a gift to yourself?
I picked it up
a pre-holiday,
weekend.
Was it?
I yeah. totally said I'm going to go back. I'm going to buy sweaters. And
for whom?
For me. And I still got into a, you know.
Well, you go through a thing where I don't, Steve, I don't know how often you shop, but I don't shop all that
no,
often.
It's like in bulk.
Right. But this time
you shop
of year,
when you need something, right?
That's the only time.
That's
really.
The only time I really, well, I might be lying.
Sometimes a little more often?
I don't shop as much as your typical chick.
No.
I don't have time. Otherwise, I would.
We had to do this dance yesterday. I'm sure you've done this at some point, metaphorically, where my wife and I were in a store, and they had this thing. It's like an old vintage baseball game, like the kind I had as a kid. There was a company, Epix, and it was like you had guys on each side, and you could maneuver the ball and then hit the ball, and then guys, it was like this old time baseball game. And I said to my wife, I had one of these when I was 9 or 10, and I'm just looking at it, and you could see the thought bubble in her head, like, well, that just made my Christmas right. shopping easy. But then you have to say, but I don't want this for as much
Why
as I like
you
looking
want
at
it.
Because I had one, and it, I mean, they're fun to play with once or twice, but yeah.
It's almost like a cheap pinball game kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
where the little
That's
flippers.
It. Yep, that's it
and
exactly.
And you can move
the players move around a little
like
bit.
Like a half inch.
Yeah. It's kind of primitive by today's standards.
It would look great in your house.
But back then, yeah, but I had to, I'm sure you've had to do this at some point where you see something and you go, oh, how cool. I don't want it for Christmas.
Right.
I really don't want it for Christmas.
I do.
I like
that.
Looking at it, but I don't need to own it. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I tell you a funny story about this theme song?
Absolutely. What is it?
I had a cat named Declan, named after Elvis Costello. And Declan was your typical cat and wouldn't listen to me. But when I whistled the theme to the Andy Griffith Show,
he would throw rocks into a pond?
No. He would come running.
Oh, he would?
Yeah, and
it's
it was
magical.
I could call his name forever, and he'd never come. But as soon as I started whistling the theme to the Andy Griffith Show, he would come running.
He got his attention.
Needless to say, he would sit and watch the show with me.
How about that?
How about it?
And he enjoyed, if I remember you telling me correctly, he enjoyed the black and white episodes way more than the color ones for some weird reason. I don't know why. If you're a fan of Andy Griffith's work or Don Knotts' work or their fantastic show, The Andy Griffith Show, we got a book for you. It's called Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. The author of that book, Daniel DeVizé, joins us right now. Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Hey, it's great to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Daniel, without any question whatsoever, that's one of your most classic TV series of all time, The Andy Griffith Show.
Highly touted by felines everywhere.
Felines love it. Cats love it. People love it. But really, the heart of this book is the friendship between those two co-stars, Andy and Don. Those guys just became incredible friends, didn't they?
Yeah, I knew they were friends when I set out to write it because I'd heard it. I mean, I think Andy said, you know, I just lost my best friend to Larry King when Don died. But I didn't know anything about the substance of it. And so it was a little bit of a diving into the deep end to set out to write the book and figure out, well, what was it to this friendship? You know, what was the nature of it? And I spent 2 years basically, you know, finding out.
You know, they really seemed like friends, obviously, when you watch the show, but I had no idea that they were that tight.
Andy was even there at the end, wasn't he? When Don Knotts passed away, Andy was bedside, right?
That's right. Andy had spent most of his adult life based out of Manteo on the Carolina shore, but largely because of Don and because of their friendship, he moved out west in what turned out to be the last years of Don's life. So Andy was there, and he was there in Don's declining years. They went had dinner together at these restaurants where the tables are spaced farther apart so you can talk in privacy. And they would go dining and drinking and telling off-color jokes. And then when Don got sick, Andy, you know, drove over the hills and visited him, and he was the last visitor to his hospital bed when Don died.
That's really sweet.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Now, Daniel, remind us, they had worked together prior to the Andy Griffith Show, didn't they?
Yeah. There was this franchise in New York, No Time for Sergeants. It was a hit book, and it became like the trifecta, you know, a hit show on Broadway and then a hit movie. And Andy and Don separately, our two guys separately, got into the production because it was a quintessential Southern thing, and they were both these Southern guys trying to make it on Broadway. So they both got roles. Andy was the star, Will Stockdale, and Don had a small role. But they met, like, on the first or second day of production. Don sought Andy out and said, hey, you know, and Andy was whittling, which you don't see much of on Broadway. and Andy recognized Don from his voice because Don had done this radio show in the first half of the 50s. And, of course, Don knew who Andy was because he had this huge football routine that had been a million-selling record.
What it was football, right? Is that the one?
Yeah. And so Andy was well-known. And they became fast friends. And the whole second half of the 50s, they spent, you know, kind of in each other's constant company, gossiping and trading stories on fellow travelers and Broadway and drinking. And, you know, but then they, at the end of the 50s, they were separated. And this is the where the two of them meet. It's like the beginning of my book is that Don was watching television one night, like in Hollywood, and he saw this pilot for the Griffith Show. And Andy's on it, but Don isn't. And so he calls him the next day and says, hey, Ange, you got a nice show cooking up there. How would you like to have a deputy? And that's been termed, you know, the most important telephone call in the history of television.
Yep.
I love that he called him Ange off the air, you know, because we just saw that in the show. Hello, Ange.
And then Andy called Don Jess, which was a play on his first name, which was Jesse. And Don hated his first name because he'd hated his father because his father was a schizophrenic and kind of terrorized him. So Andy called him that really to kind of tease him, but it was, you know, good natured teasing.
Was there ever any jealousy? I don't know if people are aware of this, but during the run of the show, I think Don Knotts won, was it 5 Emmy Awards for his portrayal as Barney Fife?
Yeah, he did. And you're in the business, and anybody who's like a comedian of today or comedic performer, he's like a legend, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yep. 5 friggin' Emmys.
Yep.
And Andy was deeply resentful of this, although it didn't hurt their friendship. But yeah, it was like a positive sort of healthy sort of resentment competition sort of thing, like Paul and John or something, you know. And Don was resentful of Andy's financial success because he was half owner of the Griffith Show. He owned half of the show.
Nice.
And it's making him very wealthy. So I write in the book, and this is, you know, newly revealed, that during the years they were on the show together, Andy never mentioned Don's Emmys. Mm. Never said, hey, attaboy, you know, good work. I think it was just too painful for him.
Well, that's not a good friendship then. I'm sorry. I mean, Don Knotts was, you know, memorable and goofy. Andy was great in the show, but Andy Taylor, you know, was just, you know, a regular guy.
Yeah.
Don went overboard, and hence the Emmys.
Yeah.
And if he was a little resentful, that's not a good friendship, in my opinion.
Well, later on, in later years, each of them was able to put this stuff behind them, and Don and Andy both, they talked about these verboten subjects later on. So on Larry King in, like, the 90s, Andy's able to make a joke about, oh, you know, I wish I had one, you know, I show it to my mother. but, I mean, Don, if you can picture this, Don, in the last 2 years, he was just a guest star, so he would come on and do, like, one show, and he'd get an Emmy for it.
Right. How about that?
When did they hook up with Gomer Pyle? Because I remember when he was on the Mayberry show, I always was blown away the first time. Come on, remember the first time you heard him sing and you were
sure.
like, what? That's Shazam, he can sing?
Yeah.
How did they hook up for the Andy Griffith show?
Yeah, he was a meteoric sort of character in Hollywood. He showed up and was working as a film cutter or something. And I'm talking about Jim Nabors now.
Yeah.
So he went on to into this nightclub called The Horn, which was where all the entertainers went late at night. And he had this act where he would do this aw shucks sort of thing, but then he'd break into opera. And it was like, oh my God.
Bizarre.
Yeah. And it was just as bizarre as that sounds. And Andy was turned on to him at some point and hired him. And he just became this massive star within like weeks. I mean, I'm talking, he was on the cover of TV Guide, you know, circulation 20 million, a number of times. And they were both, they loved working with him. You know, from those shows, those episodes with Gomer on them, there's this incredible three-way chemistry. I mean, it's crazy, crazy television. And they both, my subjects were actually sort of envious of Jim because Jim Nabors was such a natural talent, whereas Andy and Don had both worked for years to become famous or even known. And Jim just overnight became this huge deal. And Don actually went to therapy over it.
Did he? Yeah.
He was in therapy constantly. But
we're talking to Daniel Duvise. His book is called Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. It's about, of course, Andy Griffith and Don Knotts. I'm sure you noticed this, Daniel, in the first couple of seasons of the Andy Griffith Show, his character, Andy Taylor, is portrayed as something of a country bumpkin. And then a couple years in, all of a sudden, he got really wise. What was behind that? Why did he change so dramatically?
Yeah, this is a great story. Don was brought in as a kind of a one-off guy. They weren't even sure they were going to hire him. But after the first episode, you know, they spotted the chemistry and they got him on a contract. Well, the second episode, which is called Manhunt, and it's a fan favorite, it's a great episode. On that one, Don was so just crazy and good and amazing that Andy, basically, who's the showrunner, remember he owned half the show, he was kind of in charge. He said, look, from now on, Don's going to be the funny one. I'm going to be the straight guy. We're going to be like, you know, playing off each other, straight man, funny man. And from then on, for the whole rest of the show, the remaining 7.5 years, Andy was the straight guy. He was like the fatherly sort of Lincoln-esque sort of figure. And Don and the, you know, the crazy mechanic and the crazy barber and the crazy town drunk all just kind of revolved around serious, straight Andy. But it didn't start out that way. And if you watch the first bunch of episodes from the first season, Andy is really, what are they called, broad, you know,
yeah,
like pratfalls and overbearing, kind of in a sort of funny way, but it was almost a little painful, and Andy didn't like watching those shows later on.
But, you know, that version of Andy was very much like Andy Griffith's stand-up version when he would do bits like the football bit we were talking about earlier. It was the country bumpkin telling you what it was like where he lives, and then all of a sudden he changed so dramatically. But it was so smart of him to do that, to realize it's better served for the show for me to be the straight guy.
He didn't think the bumpkin character would be enduring. He didn't think it would last. He thought it would last maybe half a season, and people would tire of Will Stockdale, of that shtick. Even though, you're right, that was what Andy was known for. Everything he'd done prior to that moment was big, whether it was big comedy or big drama, like The Face in the Crowd. Big roles, you know, just scenery shredding roles, right, up until then.
I was just telling Wendy that if you haven't seen A Face in the Crowd, it's so worth seeing for a lot of reasons. But number one is to see a very different side of Andy Griffith, a very, very serious side. I love that movie. He's so good in it.
Yeah, Elia Kazan, you know, picked him out. And, I mean, it was like a Brando sort of performance. And Elia drew this sort of animalistic sort of anger and just raw emotion out of Andy, and he did it by kind of whispering into Andy's ears this stuff about, oh, you're no good, you know, you're white trash, you're nobody. And for Andy had grown up kind of poor in North Carolina, and this was like his Achilles heel, was being called white trash or kind of poor, you know, low-class Southerner. And so Elia just sort of worked him up into this fit and then set him loose on the set, and that was the guy you saw in the movie.
And Don Knotts did pretty well afterwards. Was he Mr. Furley on Three's Company?
Yeah,
Incredible Mr. Limpet is one of my favorite movies, although after seeing it, every time I see a fish now, I think of Don Knotts. And then you had your Andy Griffith, who went on to Matlock, of course, and did well. They both continued working.
Yeah, in Don's case, he had these sort of 5-year stints that were all very successful for him. He did like 5 Universal films, and you just named Mr. Chicken.
The Ghost of Mr. Chicken? Was that it?
Oh, I forgot about those.
Yeah.
Billy Bob Thornton told me that Don is his favorite actor, and I mean, I'm serious, he wasn't kidding.
I could tell.
And then Don did a bunch of Disney films.
Apple Dumpling Gang, was he in
there? Yeah. I mean, I used to watch those like on probably WGN when I was a kid in Chicago. And then he did 5 years on Three's Company. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was like high school years, like middle school, high school. I remember watching it every week, and I loved that show.
I just remember Bad Polyester around time.
A lot of Bad Polyester.
And scarves.
You know,
and
one of the
variations of it, yes.
One of the reasons the show was such a hit, Daniel, as I'm sure you're aware, is the supporting cast, all the different people who lived in Mayberry. And it's always fun to see people who were only on for a couple of episodes who do okay for themselves afterwards, like Jack Nicholson comes to mind. I know he was in a couple episodes of the show. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you look at people's IMDb credits, you'll see a lot of the big actors from the second half of the 60s were on The Griffith Show in the first half of the 60s. Buddy Ebsen played a great role as a hobo, and that's a wonderful episode. Barbara Eden played this really sultry hairdresser who really didn't belong in Mayberry. I mean, my God, the men were all just jaws dropped to the floor. huge cast of characters. And yes, I think Jack Nicholson and pretty much anybody who was on any kind of... Oh, and one of my favorites is Gavin McLeod. He's the guy who became the Love Boat guy.
Right? Yeah.
Murray Slaughter on Mary Tyler Moore.
Right.
Yeah. He did a wonderful turn in a later Griffith episode as a guy who plays Sheriff Taylor in a movie. It's a weird episode, but he's hilarious. He does this horrible, over-the-top version of Andy Taylor, and it's cringeworthy, but it's very funny.
Was that called The Sheriff Without a Gun, I think, maybe? Does that sound right?
Yeah. It was a trio of episodes from season 6 whose theme is set the Taylors travel to Hollywood. It doesn't make much sense, but they're funny episodes. And they're making a movie about Sheriff Taylor, which also doesn't make any sense. And Gavin McLeod is front and center in this one episode. It is a scream. It's really good.
The book is called Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship in a Classic American TV Show, Daniel DeVise. And what a great Christmas present this would be, because, I mean, Bill, just listening to us talk about this as we're thinking back of the memories, what a great Christmas stocking gift. I got to say that.
Well, yeah, if you put it in your bookcase, Barney stares out at you into eternity because his face is right there on the spine.
You know, for years, Daniel, here in Chicago, there was this block of television. At 6 o'clock every night, you had the Andy Griffith Show, and then at 6:30, it was Dick Van Dyke. And that was my favorite hour of the day every day, was watching those old reruns of those two shows. It was just perfect comedy.
Yeah, I loved the Griffith Show as a kid, and I guess growing up in Chicago, and I think, I don't know if both you are, I think you're both from there too.
Yeah.
It appealed to me, in spite of the fact that there's certainly nothing particularly rural about, like, you know, Belmont and
right.
Belmont or whatever. But, and yet it appealed to me, and I think it's because it was so calming. It was like herbal tea.
Yeah.
And it would just calm me down after getting home from, like, Lincoln Park High School, and I would just relax and watch the show, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, visual herbal tea. I like that. But and that Opie didn't do so badly for himself either.
Yeah, what did he go on to do, Daniel? Anything of importance?
One or another thing. I can't remember, but it took me a year to get him on the phone, but he was so gracious when I finally interviewed him. He was really helpful, and his father, Rance, is a class act. He's the ultimate, like, consummate Hollywood dad, because he raised him really, really well, you know, and he was on the set every single day looking after Opie, playing catch with him, getting him to his Little League games, and getting him to his little one-room schoolhouse. And so Ron was, like, raised really well, but right there on the set of the show, which you don't hear that kind of story about a Hollywood child actor very often.
All right, and someone has just texted us from the 224 area code. Do you know why Mayberry was so happy? No one was married. Barney, Andy, Floyd, Aunt B, and so on. Only one was Otis, and he was the town drunk.
This was Ron Howard may have been the first person to promulgate this theory, and the theory is, yes, indeed, there aren't really spouses. There aren't really complete nuclear families in Mayberry. It's almost like the whole town is one big family. And Andy, again, getting back to this idea that he's like the father figure. And is Opie his kid? Is Barney his kid? I'm not really sure.
I never even really thought about that until just now. I want to know about Helen Crump. Was she really an X-rated actress? That's what everybody had
Anita
said.
Anita Corsett? No, she wasn't.
But I'll tell you, if you read the book, you will learn that she and Andy had a deep and long-lasting relationship. I'm not going to call it an affair because I feel like it's bigger than that. They were an actual couple, and they were passionate and apparently in love for a very long time. And so that's why the chemistry worked so well between Andy and Helen on screen.
And then she ended up, there's a Chicago director, Del Close, who's like one of the foremost directors of improv comedy. She ended up with Del Close. That was his girlfriend for many years.
I did not know that either.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That's new to me.
The book is fantastic. Daniel, you really did a great job. The book is called Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. As Wendy pointed out, it makes a great Christmas gift for anybody who enjoys the work of Andy and Don. Daniel DeVise is his name, and he's really put together a fine work. Thanks, Daniel. Appreciate it. Have a great holiday.
Oh, you too. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. A quick break and then more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I am woman. Hear me roar in numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend.
I can't believe this was a hit.
Cause I've heard it all before.
I can't believe we don't play more Helen Reddy.
Angie Baby?
Angie Baby. Radio by her side, Angie Baby.
Wait, put it up.
You want a little more Helen Reddy?
Yes, I am wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price.
I forgot I knew all the words.
I saw her perform at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas.
She was great, wasn't she?
She put on a really good show.
Here we go. I am strong.
Here it comes.
I am invincible.
Or invisible, as I used to think it was.
Right.
When I was a kid, I'm like,
think they were invisible until the movement in the 70s.
Right. That was the turning point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Steve, I was listening to your Wintrust business lunch earlier, and you had a woman on talking about the strides that women are making in business and in the military.
Suzanne Mushin, yeah. And Ash Carter, the defense secretary, announced, I think it was last week, that now all combat positions would be open to women.
How about that?
That is awesome.
That means
that is awesome. We want to be treated as equals, and we don't want to be put somewhere. We want to be in the middle of the activity.
Yep.
Congratulations, women.
I remember as a kid.
We are not invisible anymore.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I remember as a kid thinking to myself, I saw the date, and I don't have it in front of me, of when women were finally allowed to vote, and it didn't seem possible.
It's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago. But I was going, wait, somehow the entire nation was under the belief that women's votes shouldn't count, that a woman couldn't make up her mind on who should or shouldn't be the president of the United States. Now there's a very good likelihood that a woman will not only be writing. It was 1920. Less than 100 years ago, if you were a woman in this country, you couldn't vote for the president.
That
decision was not yours. How is that possible?
That was the 19th Amendment. I was going to say 1927, but 1920.
Yeah.
Passed by Congress June 14th, 1919, ratified on August 18th, 1920. The 19th Amendment granted women the right to vote. The 19th Amendment guarantees all American women the right to vote.
That was less than 100 years ago. All right. So based on that, I found this. This is at mentalfloss.com. These are other things that women were not that long ago banned from doing. If you were a woman, you were not allowed to do these things.
I heard the promo for this.
I did a promo for this.
So you, good.
We couldn't let you into the studio during the promo.
It's nice to be part of this now.
Women are not allowed to be in promos anymore, Wendy. not that long ago, a woman was not allowed to have a credit card.
Well, that she still
should. That still makes sense. Right. That's the one. That's the one that actually still makes sense. Here's what it says. While lopsided income continues to be a problem in the workforce, there was a time when banks wanted to dictate how women spent their money that they earned. In the 1970s, single or divorced females applying for a credit card were often required to bring in a male to co-sign for their application.
My God.
That was in the 1970s. That if you were a single woman or a divorced woman and you went to Visa or MasterCard or maybe Carte Blanche at the time, and so, or Diners Club. Do they still exist? I think they're gone too, right?
1970s.
In the 70s. I'm a single woman. I want a credit card. I don't know.
You know what I think of, though, honestly, Bill? I think of my mom who lost my dad.
Yeah.
He was 46. She couldn't get a credit card in the 70s. And,
well,
like, she was the sole breadwinner. She, I mean,
too big
that's
of a risk.
Crazy.
The credit card companies saw that as a huge risk that they were not prepared to take.
She probably had to bring my grandfather with her to sign for
it. I bet.
That is disgusting.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have changed the language. When before Sharon and I were married, we bought a house together in Michigan.
Yeah.
And the language was, I think I was Mr. Steve Bertrand and she was spinster.
Get out of here.
Is that it on the form?
And the legal documents, and this would have been 93.
No way.
Yeah, she was.
We bought a house in 97, and it didn't say spinster
well,
on ours.
This was in Michigan. I don't know if it'd be different there.
It said hussy on yours.
Yeah, it did. I showed you that?
Yeah. It said, when weighing their salaries, institutions would sometimes consider only half of the total amount. It took the Senate passing the Equal Credit Opportunity Act in 1974 for lenders to stop discriminating based on gender and married status. That's in the 70s, a single woman or a divorced woman. Good luck getting a credit card. You couldn't do it.
That is terrible. We were talking about the women in the military. 815 says women having the same roles as men in the military. What if a man gets injured and needs to be carried to safety? Very few women can carry a 200-pound man. Got to tell you, there are men that can't carry a 200-pound man,
true.
Too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, God, so you get a bigger woman to do it.
Right.
And now women have no business in combat positions.
No. How about this? A woman, there was a time where a woman, and I knew this, I didn't know the timeline, was not allowed to serve on a jury.
Yeah.
At the turn of the century, a female committing a crime stood a very poor chance of facing a jury of her peers. In 1879, the Supreme Court reaffirmed early common law that labeled female jurors as suffering from, and I quote here, a defect of sex. They had a defect of sex, women. It made it unconstitutionally acceptable for courts to ban women from serving. And then in 1927, just 19 states
had decided the ban was ridiculous. 19 at the time said, no, we got to change this.
What if they didn't find it ridiculous and didn't change it?
Isn't that something, though?
I can't even believe this. Gail, are you listening to any of this?
Oh, yes. I called because I've been waiting, hoping I was being near a phone. In 1968, my husband and I used to golf, and we went up to one of the golf courses, either Winnetka or Glencoe, on a Wednesday, and my husband went in. He said, you get your shoes on and that. I'm going to go register us. And when they said, who are you golfing with? He said, my wife, Gail. And they said, she cannot golf here today. It is Wednesday. The doctors are here. There are no women allowed on the course.
What did you say?
1968. We never went back.
That's awful.
Good for you.
We never went back. We said, that is totally bogus. I mean, I wasn't the world's best golfer, but I could keep up with any foursome.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, but the attitude was, this is Wednesday. Doctors golf today. No women are allowed on the golf course.
And of course, you couldn't be.
What if there was a female doctor?
You couldn't be a woman and a doctor, Wendy. It's impossible.
Oh, yeah, that was 1968. Wendy, think about it. There probably weren't too many, and they either were either or. They golfed or they played or they were doctors. But no, isn't that ridiculous? And that's only 47 years ago.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Thank you for sharing that. And if there was a woman who was a doctor, she couldn't get a credit card.
Right.
Until that was 1970.
Yeah.
We have to get to the bottom of this. Do you mind? Because Steve Bertrand mentioned something when he and Sharon bought a house in 93, I believe, in Michigan. It said, Mr. Steve Bertrand and spinster. Catherine, you know about this?
Yes, actually it was the same year my partner and I went to buy a house and we had a female lawyer and we wanted to put spinster on our title and she would not allow that. She told them they had to put never been married.
Spinster.
That is really disgusting.
It is.
I didn't
and
know
I
that.
I'm a lesbian lawyer, so she made sure of it.
Yeah, because yours would have been double spinster.
Yes. Yes.
See, why did? How did they get?
I don't know.
How did they get to call women things like that?
I don't. I
on legal documents.
But I could see where that was a term 120 years ago. But at some point, you go,
yeah,
wow,
Whistler's
that's,
mother looked right, like a spinster, right, but I bet she wasn't. She had an right, active sex life. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, guys.
In the 40s, did they try to have it changed to dames?
Could
you
bet.
Put dames down instead of spinsters? We don't want to appear wrong. Come on.
James.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got more of these. Hard to believe, but these are things that not too long ago women could not do. They weren't allowed to do these things. If you want to text us or call us, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Lady, when you're with me, I'm smiling.
Oh, Dennis DeYoung.
Whoa. Hard to believe, but not that long ago, things that women do every single day and do them well, they were not allowed to do. The law wouldn't allow them to do certain things, like, say, oh, get a credit card.
You know, speaking of that, 708 says, I was married but had an American Express Optima credit card just in my name. Mm-hmm. After a few years, I added my husband as an additional user of the card. We were divorced in 1988. I called to have his name removed from the account and was told, exact quote, lady, you don't have any credit. 1988, and I had to start all over again because that was the only credit card I had. She added him and then called to get him taken off when they got a divorce, and then she got screwed.
It's impossible to fathom that, but that's what goes on. I can't figure it out.
I want to add this to this, Bill, too.
Sure.
I'm a man. I was told I could not join jazzercise with my wife, my wife because it's females only. How about that? That was last month. Try the veal. Works both ways. How about women's workout world?
Yeah, believe me, there are a couple of things that guys aren't allowed to do, but it's not even, you can't even come close. It's not even judgeable. Forget it. I like this one. There was a time where if you were pregnant, you were not allowed to work if you were a woman. And who else would be pregnant except for women, really? Up until 1964, maternity leave was considered permanent. Employers were, this is 1964.
Until it became illegal.
Until it became illegal. Employers were under no obligation to retain workers who got pregnant, and as many as 40% of businesses took advantage of these lack of laws. Women carrying children didn't have complete protection, and access to benefits until the 1978 Pregnancy Discrimination Act was passed.
Well, you know what's weird is there are people who never had children or men who say, that's not fair. Why should they get maternity leave?
Yeah.
But now they're offering paternity leave where fathers can take some time off too. I mean, once you reach a certain limit, you don't get paid for it.
The more advanced companies like Google and Facebook and all like that, they're the ones that are at the forefront of this saying, you know, a dad should get some time off too. Not as much time off as the woman.
But yeah, but that's extreme. They're like offering a year. That's ridiculous.
I know.
I mean, seriously, how could they hold your position for a year?
I have no idea. Did you hand in a job application form? I did.
I'm not pregnant, nor
are
you.
What about this? They don't have to know that. What about this? Taking birth control. That's hard to believe.
That it was illegal?
For women.
Contraception. Would men take it?
Well,
they wanted to grow breasts.
They had a different form of birth control. Contraception was a taboo topic for much of the 20th century, with couples in many states prohibited from doing anything to interfere with nature's course until a 1965 Supreme Court ruling. While that was nice for a woman who was married, a single female was still denied the right to use oral contraceptives in 26 states. In 1972, the Supreme Court finally overturned a Massachusetts law that made distributing birth control to singles illegal. And that was 1972. The pill was basically illegal in half the states until 1972.
That's fascinating. All right, we have some listeners, some ladies who want to jump in. And John.
Hi, how are you? This is John.
Hi, John.
Hey, I love your show. Got a good one for you. We're in Granger, Indiana, and there's a tavern, been in business, the oldest Indiana liquor holding tavern in the state of Indiana, up until about 9 years ago, and I took my wife in there one day. A woman was not allowed to sit at the bar to get a Coke, water, drink, nothing. You go to the table, ma'am, or you leave.
What, may I ask why? Well, I don't understand.
I don't either. In fact, this place, it's a wonderful tavern. It got the best hamburgers called Hoople's in Bremen, Indiana. But it's a grandfathered law. And I guess when the liquor license were first issued way back when in Indiana, women, it was like indecent, or they'd show off their tutus or I don't know what, but they weren't allowed to sit at the bar.
Yeah, but now that's what you want. You want women to show off their tutus, and then, you know, men buy you drinks, so the bar benefits.
Exactly, exactly. I don't understand it. It's just the dumbest thing, and they would not let her sit there. In fact, this happened to her one time in California. She traveled a lot. She sat at a bar, I think, in San Diego. Anyway, she had gym shoes on, sneakers, and dressed properly. They wouldn't let her sit at the bar because she had the wrong kind of shoes on. They
sure, she needed, you know,
enough.
Spiked heels.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. I'm glad women are going to the military. I'm a former Marine, and I'd fight with any woman in a minute.
Semper Fi, thank you so much
Thanks,
for your
John.
Service.
Isn't that nice to hear?
Why would you go to that bar?
I don't know. Ladies' night must have been a total washout there. Come on in, ladies, but you can't sit at the bar.
We don't really want to see her tutus.
No, we do not want to see her.
Ken, what do you have to say about all this?
Back in the 1960s, if you were married and applied for a home loan and your wife was working, they would ask you if the spouse was going to become pregnant during the life of the loan. And if you said yes, they
would
wouldn't
turn
give
you
a
down.
Loan.
That is unbelievable. Yeah.
Because that would siphon out a lot of your income, so that would screw up the loan. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, that's, every time we bitch about...
Show.
Thank you so much, Ken. Every time we complain about something, you know what? It could be way worse.
It could
and
be
it
way
was.
Worse. Right. Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Wow, this shocks me.
It doesn't make sense when you go... Because all these dates that we're throwing out, most of them are in our lifetime. And even the ones that aren't in our lifetime weren't that long ago.
I know, and when you put it down there where women couldn't vote till 1920,
right?
That's not that far ago.
No, no. Do we want more of these, or are we out of time? We're out of time. We can't do more of these. I'll just tell you a couple. I won't go into great detail, but there was a time where women were not allowed to watch the Olympics.
That's just stupid.
Who watched the figure skating?
That's figure skating question. Must have been completely empty. women weren't allowed to smoke in public places. I'm still okay with that one. That one should they should bring that one back up. Women were not allowed to wear practical bathing suits.
What do you mean practical? I don't know.
I'd have to go into long detail defining what practical is.
Oh, because they had to wear like the.
You've seen those flapper bathing suits from the 1920s, where like every part of you is covered. There's nothing showing at all. You don't want to go back to those. Yes, we should go back to those. And women, there was a time where women were not allowed to play soccer. Only men could play soccer until 1921.
What about gambling?
No, women were always encouraged to gamble. That's a good thing. Gambling is a good thing. All right, a break and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, I got to be honest. Do I seem a little bit tired to you right now?
No more than usual.
I was up all night with Saint West, you know, the baby of Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. We could not get him to sleep, so I was up until 3:30 with him last night.
What the heck is wrong with those people?
In which direction? Which aspect of this should we take?
Northwest. What's right. The first baby?
The first baby's name is Northwest. That's their daughter, Northwest, who is now 2 years old. And I just realized I know way more about the Kardashians and West than I really want to.
It shocks me, to be honest with you. I kind of just threw it out there rhetorically because I didn't think you'd know the answer.
People knew, of course, the last name here would be West again because it's Kanye. But they knew that they were creative in their naming process as they were with Northwest. So they recommended things like Wild Wild West. I'm a Batman fan, you know, so I would have gone with Adam West. I think that's a killer name. But they went with Saint West.
I don't know why.
Because that name just blends in. Nobody will ever make fun of you if your name is Saint West.
Saint West, she posted, Kim Kardashian posted on, actually the happy couple announced on Kim's website that they did decide on Saint West. The post also revealed the baby boy weighed in at 8 pounds, 1 ounce. That's a big baby.
That's a good size baby.
There was a big oven for her, for that baby to, well, she's got a lot of room in there. Well, that is a big, healthy baby.
Yeah.
The decision is one that was made towards the end of the reality star's pregnancy journey. In fact, the 35-year-old and her hubby told E! News exclusively in November, quote, we just started talking about it, and that was the last thing for us. Last time. That doesn't even make sense.
They had people sending them name suggestions. You know, there's 1,000 books, and each of the books has 1,000 names that you could potentially name your child. But because they are of the world of reality, wink, wink, they wanted people to send them name suggestions. Because it's not enough. Why go to the store and get a baby name book or think of one on your own? You'd never want to do that. You want to include the world, right? It's better that way.
Why didn't she go with GoDaddy or something? At least get some money from right. it.
Oh, she doesn't operate on that principle. She would never do anything for money.
As the holidays approach, according to E! Online, we can only imagine that Kim, Kanye, and even North will have a reason to smile with their latest family member after all they've been preparing for quite some time.
Yep.
Kim recently told E! News, we talk about baby brother all the time.
She was calling the baby brother?
Yes.
Okay.
Big Sis Nori. That's what the nickname for North.
I like the name Nori. That's got a nice sound to it. That's pretty.
She's so sweet. And yesterday, Nori said, Mommy, can I give baby brother a kiss on your tummy?
Yikes.
And she kissed my stomach. And
who hasn't at this point, really? I hate to sound accusatory, but raise your hand if you haven't kissed Kim Kardashian's stomach. Anybody? Nobody? All right.
Yeah, I don't. That's crazy. I have some good news. Can I just tell you, this isn't good news, but do you realize that John Lennon died 35 years ago today?
Yes. Isn't that shocking?
35 years ago.
It's awful. Yeah. What were you doing when you got the news?
I don't really remember the John Lennon.
You don't really?
Not really.
For some reason, this is one of, you know, everybody who lived through Kennedy's assassination, everybody remembers what they were doing and what was happening.
And we were a hair too young.
I was one day old.
Oh, and I suppose you remember it.
I remember bits and pieces.
You do not.
I don't remember anything from it. I don't remember anything. Although I think I've told you this. My parents tell the story about how people who just had babies in the hospital, I was one day old when he got assassinated. So many babies who were already named something,
the parents came back and then changed the name to John or John Fitzgerald in tribute.
I have a cousin, John Fitzgerald.
Was it because of John Kennedy?
Yep.
Yeah, was it? But they stuck with my name. So it was not
William
a slam.
William Fitzgerald
Kennedy left. When John Lennon was assassinated, I was working at a toy store in Lincoln Mall. I was in high school, and a customer came in and told us this, and we behind the counter, because it was, you know, it was Christmas time. It was a very busy time, and all these people were shopping, and a customer came in, didn't even buy anything, just walked up to the register and said, John Lennon's been shot. It doesn't look like he's going to make it, and then just walked out. And we all looked at each other behind the register and went, what a terrible joke. Why would somebody joke around about something like that? Why would somebody just come in and say something that's so unbelievably untrue?
I really don't remember.
You don't remember any of that at all?
I mean, no? It wasn't like it made a huge impact on me, which I feel bad it didn't, because we were in high school, you said.
Yeah, yeah.
I really don't. I thought it was terrible after we found out that Mark David Chapman had waited in line for an autograph, and there's all those pictures that surfaced where
he
is smiling and John's signing it, which he didn't have to do.
Isn't that weird?
And then he came back, what, 2 hours later and shot
killed
him? And then didn't they announce it on Monday Night Football?
I don't remember where they announced it, but here's what I do remember, and I can't figure out how this is possible. We didn't have really cable or satellite the way we did today, where there were 24-hour news networks. But I do remember that after the 10 o'clock news, there was some show kind of chronicling it, but Nightline wasn't on yet, was it? Was Ted Koppel's Nightline on back then, 35 years ago? It couldn't have been.
No, I thought Howard Cosell announced it.
On Monday Night Football? Was it a Monday night?
I think they broke in and did that.
Yeah?
Hang on, let me
I don't remember that,
that.
I don't remember that. But I was working through most of it, but I do remember that after the 10 o'clock news, there was some show on exploring exactly what had happened, and they didn't have, I mean, it wasn't set up like today's news sources are, where they've got cameras and people everywhere. This was 35 years ago. It was a little more primitive, but I can't figure out who was doing that back then 35 years ago.
All right, well, tell me this. Riddle me this, Batman, because John Lennon shot December 8th, 1980.
Does it say which day of the week? Was it a Monday?
Howard Cosell announced it on a Monday Night Football game.
All right.
And go ahead and play that audio, because then I have just gotten other information that said he didn't really announce it. So there's a conspiracy here, believe it or not. So this is...
John Smith is on the line, and I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. Hard to go back to the game after that news flash, which in duty bound we had to take. Frank?
Indeed it is.
You know, if you're Frank Gifford, you don't know what to say to that. I mean, you're playing a football game, and as Howard Cosell pointed out, it was a tragedy there, and it's just a football game. The weirdest line in all that is the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles. Like, why would you say that?
Because he was. Well, and he had been on Monday Night Football before.
He did. He stopped by one time, right? He stopped by the booth at some point.
And said that it was very similar to rugby, but he was a little confused about it. And I thought he talked to Howard Cosell then.
I think so, too.
That's probably why Howard said it. But don't you think he was the top of the Beatles
heap?
Well,
I mean, it was... I guess if he was, I mean, it was down to him and Paul, of course, as being the most famous, but there were so many things you could say about him at that moment. You could just say, you know, former member of the Beatles. You wouldn't have to go, sorry, Ringo, but this guy was the most famous of the Beatles. There was no reason to throw that in.
Yeah, but he was, and I'm sure none of the Beatles would dispute that.
It's like, I've told you this before, every once in a while, if Paul McCartney's on the show, in the description on my satellite, it'll say, former Beatle Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Like for anybody who's watching it going, Paul McCartney, why do I know that name? I know the name, but I can't place exactly where I know him from. You either know those guys or you don't. Most people know who they are. So who would be going, oh, John Lennon. Oh, the most famous of the Beatles. Yeah, now I know who that is.
I think he's the most famous of the Beatles.
let's say he is. I'll give you that he is. Why would that be part of the description of him being shot and killed? You could leave that part out, couldn't you? I know he's stretching to try to find something to say because it's been a tragedy, and he was probably just handed a piece of paper that probably just said John Lennon was assassinated, you know that. So he's trying to find some kind of background, but it's just a weird way to go with it.
And it is very weird because it's a football game. I mean, right. It seems weird. And here's the thing, off USAtoday.com, they said Howard Cosell didn't really announce John Lennon's death to all of America.
But we just heard him.
We did just hear it, but not everybody was watching the Patriots-Dolphins game in 1980. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll tell you that there were other places where you could have heard it as well.
All right.
So he didn't – I mean, he did break in and say it on Monday Night Football, but, like, I don't think I was watching Monday Night Football, and I don't think anyone in our house was.
But he did say – we did hear him say it.
Right,
so.
But they're saying there are other news sources that broke the news as
well. Right. All right, so we'll discover what those were in just a little bit. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Perhaps one of the greatest Beatles known to man.
The most famous of the Beatles, according to Howard Cosell, yeah.
Imagine there's no heaven. Choose if you try.
December 8th, 1980.
35 years ago today.
We heard it. Howard Cosell was the first to announce the news on Monday Night Football. And here's what happened. An ABC producer in the hospital for a bicycle accident overheard police talking about the slain man next to him, John Lennon.
Yeah.
But Cosell wasn't exactly announcing to all of America for all the hype that Monday Night Football gets in sports culture in the era of three network television like back in 1980. Okay, that's very interesting. I'm sorry, I'm just listening to that because Ro is live from the United Center, and I like hearing all the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Sure, of course.
Not that it's distracting or anything.
No.
So he did announce it, but he was not the only one announcing it. In fact, in 1980, Monday Night Football finished number 20 in the ratings behind two shows that aired at the same time, MASH and the show that followed it, House Calls. I don't even remember House Calls.
House Calls was with an actor named Bernard Hughes. He was like a...
You are like the walking TV guide.
He was an elderly gentleman who just played like a kindly old-fashioned doctor.
That sounds like...
Who still made House Calls.
Was it good?
It was all right. It was just okay. Although, I don't know if you'll remember this. I think we may have talked about this at some point. For a while, Monday Night Football was on opposite Rhoda... And on the episode where Rhoda married Joe,
yes,
they did like a play-by-play on Monday Night Football. They would cut in and tell you if you were a fan of Rhoda and Joe's, here's what you're missing at the wedding. And they were still doing the football game, but they would still give you what was going on at Rhoda's wedding.
See, I want to say I remember that, but I don't know that we had a VCR then.
No, you did. They didn't.
You know,
have them
to see it later. So maybe my brother was upstairs watching Monday Night Football because he liked to do that. Yeah. But MASH was on at the same time. Boy, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
The Rhoda and Joe wedding. So Cosell told about 20 million viewers the news about John Lennon, while an estimated 40 million found out from the NBC or CBS shows they were watching. Because this is obviously without Twitter or cell phones or texts.
Right.
So.
And it was such that, like the story I told you with the customer who came in and told us about John Lennon's death, you would get news that way because there was no, you know, nobody had a cell phone where you could just call up any news source. It was the way news used to be. It was somebody coming up and going, hey, did you hear about this guy? Did you hear what happened there? So you never knew if those stories were real or not. That's why nobody believed. There are three of us working the counter at this toy store, and they come in and go, yeah, John Lennon. And we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I know, but who's going to lie about that?
I don't know.
And then the New York Post has on its headline that night, John Lennon shot dead, gunned down by screwball outside home as wife Yoko watches in horror.
Yeah.
Screwball.
It was a screwball who did it.
Out on the front page of the paper. So it was like town crier where you got your information.
Sure. Yeah.
That when I always got all my news from Timmy, the long Chevrolet guy, extra, and I never believed him.
He was the most reliable source back then.
Extra, read all about it. Hi, Demetria.
Oh, hi. Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Yeah, I was, actually, I was a DJ at the time that happened on Minnesota Public Radio, but I was not on the air. My ex-boyfriend and I were living on a farm outside of Duluth, and we heard the report on the radio, and it switched from being an all-music show that it normally would have been. The DJ would play a song, and as the news reports came in over the... Back then, it was a teletype or something like that. It was so long ago, it wasn't even a fax machine. But as the news reports came in, he very seriously would deliver each update. And finally, when he announced John Lennon's death, he said, "I think it's time for a good drunk," and he put on Lennon's most recent album, which had been number one for quite a while, Starting Over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and John had been in... The reason he was the most famous Beatle at the time was because he had gotten past a lot of problems with Yoko that were very public. They both got off of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They had had their baby...
Sean.
And the music had come back. He was on TV and in the press constantly, more than the other Beatles back then. So that's why I think Howard Cosell said that. We didn't have a TV on the farm. We listened to the radio. But... I'm pretty sure that the preponderance of publicity for 2 years prior to his death is why he was the most famous at
I just think I would have gone with member of the Beatles, arguably one of the greatest rock groups of all time. I would have done that. I wouldn't have taken a shot at the other Beatles. Sorry about the take the shot part. But I wouldn't have said anything about probably of the Beatles, he's the most famous. I would have left that out. You know.
He also lived in New York, and Howard Cosell lived in New York, and I did not know either one of them. I don't know how social they were, but they did probably run into each other at various big show business events.
I would think so, yeah.
Well, thanks for schooling us on this. We appreciate it.
Oh, sure, you little ones. You hang in there now and listen for the latest rock and roll death that we can announce.
Thank you, Demetria. We have to give her a behind the music segment.
Yes.
Former DJ in
Without
Minnesota.
Yeah, former DJ on a college radio station.
We
got to get our start somewhere.
It was Minnesota Public Radio.
It still counts. Thanks, Demetria. Have a great day.
Bye.
You know, the other thing is, for the three of us, we had all lived through the Paul is dead rumors. You know, there were so many rumors for a while in the late 60s and early 70s that Paul McCartney was dead. That was the first thing I thought of when somebody came in and said that is like, oh, now here we now somebody's doing that with John Lennon, thinking that they're dead and they're not dead. Unfortunately, it turned out to not be that way at all.
Poor John Lennon.
I know. So talented.
Although, you know, Demetria mentioned, this was Starting Over. This is when he just was kind of out of the limelight for a while and came back with that record. And I found something online, and people, you can Google it. There's a BBC author, I can't remember, or DJ, former DJ, who got to interview Yoko and continuously interviewed her after John Lennon's death, and he became pretty close with Yoko. Although it's a pretty interesting take how she kind of pushed him into doing this record, and if he would have said something out loud, it would have been like, "Ah, oh, God, I'm not going to do this stuff."
Really?
So it's kind of interesting. Just look up BBC former DJ and his relationship with Yoko Ono. It's a pretty interesting read. We should try and get him on and talk about that.
We should try. Let's do this. A quick break, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.